Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Wasn't that fun last night? I certainly thought so. I was really glad, and it was good to have you all along for the Seneca 2 Forum lecture series featuring Bob Perry from ConsortiumNews.com and Ray McGovern. They are both very, very impressive, well-spoken, well-informed gentlemen. And Agnes, I, and Horn intern junior grade Ferg enjoyed ourselves immensely. Of course, we enjoyed ourselves most in bringing it to all of you. And although there were some fits and starts along the way, I was overall pleased with the way the video thing worked out. It will get better. I have the distinct sense that the days of my being able to sit here in complete and utter nudity doing radio are going to become, well, they are fast receding into the dim mists of the past. Oh, goodbye, naked radio. Hello, internet TV. But not yet. It's a little bit early yet to queue up Video Killed the Radio Star. But I got a feeling we'll be playing that sooner rather than later. But it was an enjoyable experience, and I hope the information conveyed was also useful to you. Although I wasn't able to talk with him on air, I did have an excellent conversation with Bob Perry off air. And what may have actually been more important, foreign intern junior grade Ferg had a tremendous conversation with Ray McGovern in his own right. And, you know, how do you say this? Modern 14-year-olds are, to say the least, jaded. They are inundated. They've been inundated from the day they were born with information and media, and they multitask, and they do a little of this and a little of that. But to see Ferg just absolutely home in, on what Ray McGovern had to say and the things that he told Ferg was inspiring, very much so. So it was overall a very good experience. And a little bit of a programming note. Coming up toward the end of next week, at the very least, I will be gone for a bit. We have coming up in the second week of March what is usually referred to as Lobby Week in Washington. It's technically called The Week in Washington, when a whole bunch of us folks who are affected by mountaintop removal go to Washington and walk the corridors of power, trying to convey to members of Congress exactly what a horror it is when we have to deal with the effects upon our persons and upon our property, upon our and upon our future, and yes, even upon our past, of mountaintop removal. So I will be gone the better part of, if not the entirety of, the second week of March. We don't know quite yet whether that's all going to be reruns or. And I haven't even taken time to talk to John Fox and see if he might want to be interested in covering one or any of those nights. So I just wanted you to, I wanted you to know in advance. Hey, where's Bob? Well, you know, Bob's doing the thing that Bob has to do to try to save Bob's home. So, yeah, that's the second week in March. And it probably will foreshorten the broadcast week by at least Friday next, not day after tomorrow, but a week from day after tomorrow. So I'm glad we've gotten that out of the way. You know, when I do one of these road trips, it gets a little, you know, it just somehow throws me off a little bit. You know, it's kind of, it's only 50 miles, but 50 miles in the dark with coal trucks barreling at you that overweight and over speed really will put a little strain on the psyche, and that's the way it was driving home last night. And it kind of, and so I've spent all day going, what day is this? And then it dawned on me just as I was starting the program, holy cats, it's Wednesday already. It's Wednesday. It's the middle of the week. From here on, it's downhill to Friday. It's hump day, baby. But of course, it is so much more than that, at least here at the Horn, because Wednesday is that special day. It is that special day when we get together and we gather for fellowship and sistership down in the fellowship hall, have our Wednesday evening fellowship dinner, and having snuck off with that second piece of pound cake with a little bit of strawberries drizzled over it. Having got away with that, we conclude the supper and we head up to the sanctuary. Because brethren and sistren, hallelujah, praise and glory, it is prayer meeting on the Horn. If our minister of music would kindly come up and lead us in the traditional prayer meeting on the Horn, opening hymn.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Present for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, he's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, sure, Mr. Massawell! Mary's it oats and dozy oats and little lambs it out of you. Kiddly daddy too, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you? Amen. And amen. Ha! Glory. Come on down. Come on down. Come through the vestibule. Take your program from the deacon there as you enter the sanctuary. But come on down that blood red carpet and fall on your knees at the altar, sinner. Lay your hands upon the subwoofer. and feel the healing rays of reason and common sense flowing through you as you connect to the server of sanity here in the cathedral of common sense. Hallelujah! I am Archpope Bob Kincaid. And it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Yes. Yes, it is. So glad I am to have reached this day. I've just received something from Deacon John Fox. It's a bit of a visual. And I realize that in talking about this, we are dancing about architecture, dear Jesus. But it's a handwritten note in crayon, placed upon someone's automobile, that appears to be quite real. And it has to do with the fact that this individual had upon his or her car a little sign, and we all know what it looks like. You can imagine it. I don't have to describe it in great detail. It's merely a Tyrannosaurus Rex taking a bite out of the Jesus fish. The note says as follows. I absolutely do not appreciate the dinosaur sticker on your car. If you want to park in my complex, it needs to come off, or I'll take it off. And it's signed, Tierra Mesa Resident. You have to say it that way. Resident! Because it's written in red crayon, and resident has an exclamation point after it. Oh, one does love and adore the peace-loving followers of he who shall be called King of Kings, he whose name shall mean joyful. You know, that tolerant guy. What a way to start the program. Merciful. John just said, oh, thank you. I wanted to hear you read it. Oh, God, what a way to get started. But that ain't all. That ain't all. No, hell no. No, we take you. No. I'm just amazed that this isn't like Miss Alabama. But no, it is the predecessor. Well, the woman who wants to be the follower or follower-upper or predecessor? No, not a predecessor, not an antecedent, not a precedent. No. Damn, lost the word. Anyway, yeah, Reverend Tobias Black, I will not tolerate intolerance. Anyway, this woman is Miss Beverly Hills 2010. That's just too confusing because she should be Miss Beverly Hills 90210, but it should, no, Miss Beverly Hills 2. Oh, that means 2010. I'm a little oslay on the uptake, I, Ray Alnay, if you know what I mean. Her name is Lauren Ashley. And she's going to compete in the Miss California pageant in November, and I guess this is some means of, and there's a photograph of her, and she appears not to have no shirt on. And she's looking kind of pissed off and mad about it from what the picture I'm seeing. But she is following in the footsteps, in whatever word for that is, she's following in the footsteps of Carrie Prejean, Carrie Freak, you know, Carrie Funbags, the one that wasn't happy with the breastuses that God gave her, so she had them surgically improved. I'm sure by a fully Christian surgeon, just the same. But no, yeah, that Carrie Prejean. Lauren Ashley is her successor. There's the word. And she told Fox News, because Fox News, successor. Why Fox News felt the need to interview her, we will never know.
But they did, and she wanted the world to know her thoughts on the Homer sectionals. I have yet to figure out the fascination of these phony followers of the Prince of Peace with the homosexual community, unless it has a whole lot to do with downright Freudian latency. But at any rate, in the story written about her at Fox News, it says the following. Carrie Prejean isn't the only beauty queen open to expressing her objection to same-sex marriage. Miss Beverly Hills 2010, see, I got it right that time, Lauren Ashley is also speaking out in support of traditional nuptials. Now, being traditional Bible-based nuptials, I guess she's just sitting around waiting for somebody to trade her off for 14 camels, 16 oxen, 13 asses, and, you know, a sheep. No. The Bible, quoting her, the Bible says that marriage is between a man and a woman. In Leviticus, it says, if man lies with mankind as he would lie with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination. They shall surely be put to death, and their blood shall be upon them. The Bible's pretty black and white, Ashley told Pop-Tarts. Pop-Tarts. Yes, I suppose it's some sort of a publication or periodical or online something or another. It's one of those internets that get delivered down your series of tubes. Pop-Tarts. I feel that God himself created mankind, and he loves everyone. And he has the best for everyone. If he says that having sex with someone of your same gender is going to bring death upon you, that's a pretty stern warning. And he knows more than we do about life. Yeah. Absolutely. One's imaginary friend always knows more about one's about life than, say, one does. That's always the way it is with it. You can ascribe all kinds of things to the imaginary friends. Of course, usually you have your imaginary friend when you're about 4 years old, and when, you know, mama says, did you poopy in the corner?
Nah.
Who poopied in the corner?
My imaginary friend? He did it? Uh-huh. Sure did. Really? Okay.
Well, would you tell your imaginary friend to quit poopying in the corner?
Okay.
But, you know, you have to take Lauren Ashley seriously, because there she is all bare-shouldered with what can only be, you know, this sort of eyes of Laura Moore's, Mars smoldering look coming at you. Lightning bolts might start flying out of that thing. You fail to take her seriously. At your peril, brother, sister, because in Leviticus it says, if man lies with mankind as he would lie with a woman. Wait a minute. If mankind lies with mankind as he would with a woman.
No, honest, honey, I was at the library. I did not go to the strip joint.
That's how man lies with a woman. And I think what Leviticus is saying is that if you're in a position, not like that, bunch of pervs, but if you're in a situation where you're saying kind of stuff like that to your guy buddies, then, yeah, you're doomed because, you know, your guy buddies are not going to buy it any more than your wife or girlfriend does. I don't think Leviticus is about sex at all. It's about the lies you tell to your friends. It's a totally different lie that you tell them on your guy buddies. No, dude, she was totally into me. No, like, totally. I mean, she was on me like a cheap suit. Oh, my God. It was awesome, dude. She so digs me. That's the kind of lie you tell among your guy friends.
Oh, honey, really, I was at the office. I didn't go to the strip joint. That's not lips. That's just a red Sharpie on marker neck mine.
See the difference? That's what God did. But see, these freaks have no understanding of Scripture like I have an understanding of Scripture. But she did go on, this poor, benighted, unclothed smoldering, glance-sending, pouty-lipped woman. She did go on to say, of course, you know, lots of my friends are queer. Yes. And like, there's no hate between me and anybody. And it's true, you know. Because, see, I'm not hating anybody. It's God hating them. I don't hate them. God just hates them. And I'm just saying what God says. And I did not poopy in the corner. Oy. But that's where we start. Unfortunately, it looks, in answer, having looked at the photograph, it looks very much red crayon to me. Or maybe it's out of one of those, the note there on the car. It looks very much red crayon, like something out of, like the Crayola 64, where you've got red and brick and mango and the burnt sienna and all of it. It's one of those shades of red. Because the writer, male or female, just named resident. What an odd name to give a person, resident. I guess was in too much of a hurry to get a pen. Did he, huh? But did have a 64 count box of mega Crayolas laying around? And go figure. And, Marty chiming in says, I guess no one told Ms. Ashley or Pre-Gene or any of these others that Leviticus was from the Old Testament? The Ten Commandments? Like, how we're supposed to be living? Is in the New Testament? Right? No. See? Marty, leave the scripture and the theology to a trained professional like myself. The Ten Commandments are also in, and several iterations of them, several different versions. Who knows which ones you're supposed to follow? They're in the Old Testament, too. But if you are a Christian, as Lauren Ashley professes to be, that all got wiped out. It don't count. The cross is a mulligan, a do-over. You know, a mulligan, like Elizabeth Hasselbeck, said that Tiger Woods is entitled to. Yeah, she did. No, really. She said Tiger Woods is entitled to a mulligan. Don't go there. The visuals are hell. They really are. Just don't. Don't. Oh, God. So I say burnt sienna, and I get back, real red by Helena Rubinstein? Maybe Charles of the Ritz? Or since we're working the Lauren Ashley, then maybe it was, I don't know, the Estee Lauder? You know, it could be lipstick. Because it's kind of a broad point there. Loonies. Yeah, Marty, I know. You always reserve the right to be incorrect. I always reserve the right to be downright wrong. But we're going to have a busy night, I think. A very busy night. And by the way, coming up in about 7 minutes, a conversation, with a person for whom I have a tremendous amount of respect. We're going to be joined by Mark Carlin from BuzzFlash.com. Mark is, after all, the buzz in BuzzFlash. And he's been at it for eons now. And we're going to be talking about the direction of the progressive movement and how the progressive movement gets, or liberal movement, whatever you prefer to be called, gets from point A to point B, and sort of hopefully leads America to the light. And away from the Dick Cheney dark side. You know, if there was ever proof that Dick Cheney is not a fully functioning human, that there is some significant or perhaps majority part of him that is cyborg, it is the fact that that man is still alive. He, what we talked about at the end of the program Monday night, did turn out to, in fact, be a heart attack. His heart does continue, or what passes for one, to reject his otherwise cybernetic body But through the miracles of medical science and the best government-run health care that the American people can provide him, the guy keeps ticking and eviling and nastying. Just get bacon biscuit. Bacon biscuit. And I was reminded on Facebook today, Bob, for God's sakes, don't forget the gravy. Yep, gravy. Microwave it. You know, if you haven't signed, if you haven't friended up with me on Facebook, and you do Facebook, don't hesitate to do so. I confirm every request, and I find myself actually so ashamed, enjoying tweeting, because it's kind of like a literary Sudoku. This puts haiku to shame. To distill considerable ideas into, what, 140 words or 140 letters? 140 letters, not words. And so do jump into Twitter and sign up for my alerts or follow me or whatever. Don't follow me. I'm lost. But, you know, whatever it is you do on Twitter, feel free to do. So we'll be talking in a very few minutes with Mark Carlin. But let's try to wedge in one phone call before we do that, or not. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, what's up?
Well, before I get started on mine, you did mention the fact that this lady wanting to use Leviticus, was she wearing two different kinds of cloth?
Well, the picture I got, she ain't wearing no cloth at all.
Ooh. Because you remember now, Leviticus, if you're wearing two different types of clothing...
You'd be taken outside the city gates and stoned to death.
I know. Leviticus is a fun book of the Bible. Oh, it's got things in there to scare the...
Them Levites was some mean ones.
I know. Okay. Since you got short time, let me run through these quick. First of all, have we noticed how the mainstream media isn't covering this whole thing with Brother Joe Stack? You know... By the way, we don't mention the fact that he forgot to mention that $12,000 of his wife's income, and that's why the IRS came to visit him. You know, if I don't mention $12,000 of my income, I bet they're coming to visit me, too.
Well, you know, but I got to say I was proud of Representative Clyburn for standing up and mentioning the fact that Vernon Hunter is the hero in this.
Oh, yeah.
And that Joe Stack is just a POS.
I mean, if you want some good stuff, I'll send you a couple of them. Go to the Austin Statesman. They've had some good editorials and stuff on this. Let's see, what else? Oath Keepers. Well, welcome to the modern fifth column.
I know.
Was it one out of every 100 soldiers? We have to worry about killing the other 99 now? Let's see, was it C Street I saw is being challenged?
Yeah.
Somebody got to take their...
got that on the list, and there's another challenge out there, too. The IRS is being asked to investigate... the fact that the Chancellor Jerry Falwell Jr., God, that's just enough to put you off dinner, and other Falwell University officials used school resources to endorse a House of Delegates candidate in Virginia.
Yeah.
So between that and C Street, there's some hope.
Okay.
And luckily, if he's anything like his daddy, there's not a small aircraft out there big enough for Jerry Falwell Jr. to get in and fly into anything. Except maybe, you know, except
his father and him running him over to South Africa. You know?
Well, yeah, I was going to say with the exception of maybe a Denny's Grand Slam breakfast.
The one that got me yesterday, I sent you, was the thing about the Israeli drones.
Now, see, I missed that. I was sort of out of pocket all day yesterday, getting ready for that.
I'll send you one over about the Israelis unveiling these new drones they've got that can reach Iran. And
no need for Iran to be nervous.
They got like a 5.5 mile ceiling, so. You know, but and amazingly enough, guess who they bought it from or got it from? The USA.
Oh, would that be us?
That'd be us. If you follow it back, it goes to a company of theirs, but it's through a deal with Lockheed and all these other things. You know what I mean? They're somewhere in that mess. There's something I sent you on it. So when you get a chance. And the other one, did you notice how CPAC got that nice all day and all prime time coverage? You know, the last couple of years I've watched Netroots, I had to set the VCR for 1 a.m. because that's the only time C-SPAN will carry it. It's like from 1 to 5 in the morning. You know?
Yeah, no kidding. And, you know, we could probably do a whole show on that Jesus, what a freak show that was.
No.
John Stewart did a lovely job with it, by the way.
Oh, that really was. Oh, and like I say,
it's Altamont.
Well, if you go over to the side or over to the stuff from Bill Maher from Friday night.
Oh, caught that. Very good, very good.
Oh, him and from Family Guy, Seth MacFarlane.
Yeah.
Oh, that was just hilarious. You know. And I tell you who surprised me on that was Elliot Spitzer.
I think maybe Elliot's not completely willing to
walk away.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's sort of like Elliot. Look, Newt did a lot worse than you. Come on out there. You get back into the politics. And anytime somebody says anything to you, just say point at a picture of Newt and go. You know, if y'all want to jump on me, look at that.
Yeah, no kidding.
I said, Newt's done a lot worse than I did. Because we talked about this when he got in trouble. If he hadn't gotten that trouble, he probably would have been your attorney general.
I think very possible, or down the road a presidential candidate. I mean,
at the time, you know, when he was busting the stuff up there in New York.
But he crossed the wrong crooks. And instead of getting a horse's head in his bed, he got a hooker.
Well, on the whole, I'd go for that, y'all.
Hey, Luke, I got to run along, brother, but good talking to you.
All right, bud. Have a good evening.
Bye now. All right, let's keep things rolling here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Bob? This is Mark Carlin.
Hey, Mark, I was expecting you were right on time.
I try to be. It's not easy. We're up here in Chicago. We're buzz flash from the heartland of America, not the East Coast or West Coast, just like you're from the heartland, West Virginia, and there's snow on the ground, but I try to be on time.
Well, you did a magnificent job. I've already primed the pump, as it were, Mark, letting folks know that you would be calling in for this discussion. You know, I noticed that the BuzzFlash Wings of Justice Award was awarded to the folks who pulled off the really impressive Progress PA convention where you and I got a moment to talk up in Harrisburg on the 30th of January. That meeting had more to it, not than meets the eye, but I think there was more subtext to it than we should probably be paying attention to in states outside Pennsylvania.
Bob, you're absolutely right. I think Keystone Progress deserved the BuzzFlash Wings of Justice Award this week because it showed a lot of different things. First of all, on a very human level, everyone was upbeat. This was not a whining session. People were enthusiastic. They wanted to get out. They wanted to make change, and they wanted to make it on the grassroots level. Two, Keystone Progress is a model organization that has overcome a division you and I have talked a lot about, which is between labor and the social progressives, which still exist, even though the Democratic Party doesn't want to acknowledge it. Both groups generally support the Democratic Party, although some of labor has gone over to the Reagan Republicans and are sympathetic to some of the Republican talking points and means. But basically, the social progressives don't talk a lot about labor, and this group, Keystone Progress, just did a tremendous job, headed by Mike Morrow. It was co-sponsored by two unions, SEIU and AFL-CIO, plus Keystone Progress. There were many, many other unions involved. You had social progressives and union members there together. My sense was it was about 50-50, and it was a very enthusiastic agenda about what could be done on the grassroots level. This was not a session that focused, like, and BuzzFlash has to admit, we do this like a lot of times on Washington. It focused on what can we do in our backyard in the state of Pennsylvania for unions, for socially progressive issues, and how can we bring labor and social progressives together. I was on a panel about that very issue. What are our common values instead of focusing, as the Republicans do, on wedge issues that drive some people in labor and social progressives away from each other? What do we have in common that is more important than these Republican wedge issues that they've used for decades now since Nixon? And so we really think that Keystone Progress well deserves the Buzz Flash Wings Justice Award because it shows that we don't have to sit in a morass and bemoan that more hasn't happened since Obama was elected. But if we really want to do something, it's not just signing a petition on the Internet. It's getting out there and making change, and that's what Keystone Progress is all about. And I might say that on a real, in a symbolic level, the conference was held in the capital of Pennsylvania, Harrisburg, not in its largest city, Philadelphia, which is the fifth largest city in the United States. And I think that's really symbolically important. This group was here to say it was about 600 people. It was a large group that was sold out. We've got something to say and something to do, and we're going to have an impact. And we're not just going to send emails on the Internet. We're going to get out there. We're going to walk the streets. We're going to come to Harrisburg. And every state should have an organization like Keystone Progress that, again, unites the powerful force of progressive and labor. If you put social progressives and labor together, you have an unstoppable force. The Republicans have been very successful in peeling enough of the labor movement off. And the social progressives, unfortunately, many of them in the leadership have taken the labor movement for granted, that it's given enough opportunity for the Republicans to kind of, even if they're in the minority, steer the ship. But the Keystone Progress says enough of that. We're going to get united, and we're going to see some change. So,
well, one of the things that I found impressive, Mark, although I was not there, I was not able to be there all day long. I had planned to be there, but wound up fighting a freak snowstorm for the better part of the day.
Yes, I recall that.
What a day that was. But one of the things that impressed me is that I saw booths set up there by a rather broad panoply of organizers for progressive or liberal causes. I saw paper ballot folks there. I saw healthcare folks there. I saw labor people there. And that really does sort of, I hope, shine a hopeful light on the direction that this needs to take, because it represents this holistic view that I take of being a liberal, where I'm not just a liberal on one issue. I live in an area where human rights and environmentalism are just in my face, but by the same token, because I'm a liberal, I'm a labor guy, I'm a feminist, I'm a gender equity guy, and as such, I think, or at least I'm trying to be, and I know a lot of Horn listeners are as well, well-rounded liberals, because you mentioned a few minutes ago this focus that the right wing has had on divisive issues, and I'm hoping that the toxic seeds that they have sown are beginning to bear fruit. If you saw the shouting and the screaming and the nastiness and the boo fest over the inclusion of a gay GOP group at CPAC, it looks like some of that hate is coming home to roost, and I certainly hope that it does. But where we're concerned, if we stand together, we have a much better chance. And if we can get those individual groups to understand that the best way to go forward is to engage on that holistic level, we have a much better chance. I guess the question for me is, they did a magnificent job in Harrisburg, and I think there's a lot of significance to what you point out about where they chose the location, because as my colleague Rick Smith, who was broadcasting there that day, pointed out to me, and you know, he's a Pennsylvanian, so he gets to say it. He said, you know, in Pennsylvania, you've got Pittsburgh in the west and Philadelphia in the east and Alabama in the middle. And that's where we were. And working toward that sort of more blue collar base, I think gives us a better chance. And the question arises, how do you, as you mentioned, how do you build that momentum in each and every state?
Well, Mike Morrell gets a lot of credit. He's the head of Keystone Progress, the executive director. They have a board. And he's built a tremendous force of activism that's email to a certain degree, but also on the ground. And that's where the difference is made. I was talking to a woman who heads a group that's an offshoot of the AFL-CIO, and it's an organization for working men and women to belong to. We don't have union representation, but they want to be identified with the union movement. And she was saying, she was on this panel I was on about finding common values between labor and social progressives. And she was saying, if you take the labels that the mainstream media uses so much, conservative or liberal, and you talk to some of their members who are working people but not unions, and therefore probably paid less than union members, they'll identify themselves as sort of leaning toward the conservative side. But when you break it down on issues and you talk to them, they're for universal health care. They're for more money for education. They're for reducing our military commitment abroad. They basically, with the exception of maybe a couple socially progressive issues that tend to divide, they actually divide the nation. Abortion is one of them. They will tend to agree with social progressives on 90% of the issues. But the media, and particularly the people who do the wordsmithing, like Frank Luntz, who some listeners may know of for the Republican Party, who's been a crucial communications consultant to them, because he's identified the framing language, as George Lakoff calls it, that gets working people, some working people, to identify liberals, quote unquote, or social progressives as the enemy. I mean, this is what Rush Limbaugh does all the time. It's what Glenn Beck does now. It's what Sean Hannity does. It's not the corporations in their eyes that are exploiting the workers and taking their jobs, as AFL-CIO is pointing out about Whirlpool. It's one of the big companies trying to close a plant in Indiana. They won't recognize the right-wing echo chamber, these corporations who have taken the jobs from hardworking Americans and transported them to low-wage markets. They blame liberals for the plight of the worker. And the worker is looking for scapegoats. Listen to this. The Democrats tend to try to reason with people, and basically we as human beings have a big emotional side to us, and that's why some of these right-wing talk show hosts and people like Limbaugh can be so successful, because they appeal to the emotional side. People need a scapegoat. And so Limbaugh today was defending Toyota, if one can believe that, and saying that the only reason the Congress was cracking down on Toyota was because they don't use union workers in the South, which is where their plants are, I think primarily Alabama. And so he was blaming this on the union movement, in essence, that Toyota has an accelerator problem that has killed people. How you get to that point is not by any way logical. It's not rational. It's not reasonable. It doesn't make any sense.
It's not even factual.
Well, it's not factual. It's just, it's nonsense. Toyota admits that in its efforts to try to beat GM as the number one car maker, which it has done, it sacrificed its quality standards, which has resulted in the deaths of many people in a recall. This was Toyota's corporate goal, and it had nothing to do with union versus non-union workers. But this is what people here in the United States, and they believe Rush Limbaugh because emotionally they need a scapegoat. The Democrats, we have Buzzfeed, we have you, doing magnificent jobs. We have Rachel Maddow, and Keith Olbermann, and, Tom Hartman and other radio programs. But we don't have this large audience that the right wing has. We don't have a Fox network that's constantly feeding misinformation. And therefore, things get framed in a way where the many working people believe the siren song, that they hear that the scapegoat is somehow liberals or the unions. That's what Walmart says also. And this is very dangerous to democracy.
Well, it absolutely is. And, you mentioned Walmart, and anytime I hear Walmart, I think Blanche Lincoln. When we tried to get the Employee Free Choice Act passed, which would have been a monumental step forward for working people in America, and it would have been much more likely to protect jobs, then what you had was Blanche Lincoln coming out and saying, well, you know, I don't think we need to be giving workers more freedom in the middle of a recession, when in fact that's exactly what happened, Mark, with the National Labor Relations Act being enacted right smack dab in the middle of the Depression and actually contributing to the recovery as opposed to making the Depression worse under the FDR administration. You're absolutely correct. These people operate solely and exclusively, not so much by misinformation, but by direct disinformation. Not only, as you noted, not only do we not have a major media outlet to simply spin liberal or progressive issues, we don't. There aren't even any media outlets out there, with the limited exception of people like Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann, and yes, Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert. We don't even have anybody out there that will simply give the facts.
Yes, that's true, and one of the problems is that, first of all, when Comcast takes over, which it will, NBC, it may very well get rid of the so-called progressive programming on MSNBC. Comcast is a very conservative company. Second of all, these are corporations. The media is corporations. They're on public airwaves making millions of dollars, but they're corporations. And we don't get them to take money back as tax dollars. They sell advertising and get it. You and I, that is BuzzFlash and The Horn, have to live as we can on people donating, in the case of BuzzFlash, buying progressive premiums from our site. We don't take advertising. You don't take advertising, because we see that as part of the inherent problem of becoming enmeshed in the corporate infrastructure that controls Washington, D.C. Neither of us are against the idea of corporations, but we're against the idea that corporations control the government to a great extent.
Or are treated just as a flesh-and-blood human being.
As of the Citizens United Supreme Court decision on January 21st, exactly. And they tend to, in their newscast, use the same framing devices, again, as George Lakoff, a professor at Berkeley, calls them, so that you hear the same language. They tend to use the same language about political back and forth in Washington. How often does a newscast and a corporate entity actually enlighten us about an issue? They cover issues as though they're football games, sports spectacles, not really about something as fundamentally important to the national safety and security of America as health care. And I might point out, just as an example, of what activism can do at the grassroots level and why we singled out Keystone Progress on BuzzFlash. They have, as an offshoot, a group that worked on behalf of single payer in Pennsylvania. And that group was so successful, and they were represented at the conference, that the Democratic Party of the state of Pennsylvania voted to support single payer health care statewide in Pennsylvania. And that shows you what grassroots activity could do. People would think, well, you won't get the Democratic Party of any state to support that. And one is the Democratic Party as diverse as the one in Pennsylvania. But they did, because they know that you have to put in the sweat equity to make it
exactly
happen. And it's not, you know, as much as you're on the radio, we're on the internet, you know, I still have to say that the internet has been a fantastic force, but one of its downsides has been that people feel if they sign a petition to their senator or congresswoman or man, that that's sufficient action to
right, that they that they've done as much as they need to do. And Mark, you know, I've beaten on this from time to time, because what we call what we do here, among other things, activist radio, and it's not just enough to say I agree or to shoot out an email or something like that. One of the most important things you can do, anybody, anywhere, in any community, is to merely be willing to speak up. And by that, I don't mean, you know, standing on the street corner or the courthouse lawn screaming at the top of your lungs. I mean to be unafraid to be liberal, to espouse progressive positions, and to do it in the line at the grocery store. To do it while you're pumping your gas, while you're at the post office. To be open and straight up about where you stand and what this country needs.
That's exactly right. I think that we, Democrats tend to be afraid of engaging people in public. And I'm not talking about getting into a heated argument where you start throwing punches. But as this young woman who works with the offshoot AFL-CIO, that again allows working people who are not in unions into feeling that they're part of the union movement, she emphasized again and again how important it is to go one-on-one with people. Because otherwise they believe what they hear on Fox. And if you're not there saying, okay, well, tell me what your concerns are, and answering them, and also letting them get comfortable with you as a person, this is important, too, because the right wing is so successful at demonizing progressives that many people think we have horns. And therefore, unless we, you know, show them that they can feel comfortable with us as people, there's going to be a problem. We're going to continue to have the Democrats in D.C. cower as they do, acting as if they're a minority party when they're a majority party, a little less majority now than they were before Scott Brown won, but still an enormously large majority party, at least before the 2010 elections. But they act as if they're the minority party. The Republicans seem to be the one who hold up nominations. Secretary of State Clinton was complaining today that the Republicans have held up appointments to State Department diplomatic posts just to obstruct the Obama administration. They really don't care about the national security of the United States, and she was saying this affects national security.
Well, let me ask you a quick question, Mark. First of all, I was given word yesterday that the annual Progressive Media Summit hosted by the Senate Democratic Caucus is going to be on March the 10th upcoming in very short time. Have you been notified of that?
I got a notice, I think, about 3 months ago or 2 months ago that they were going to have that. I haven't had an email. Read anything since then? No.
Well, I don't know if it's possible for you to be there, but I'm going to make every effort to go, and hopefully my colleague Guy James will be able to join me. And I was thinking about it earlier today, wondering how much grief these people are willing to take. I appreciate their graciousness in sitting down to talk with what exists of so-called liberal media in this country. But at what I don't, you know, and I don't think that it's the people we identify as honest to goodness liberals in the Senate. If you think of someone like Sherrod Brown, he's not part of the problem. Debbie Stabenow's not part of the problem.
Right.
And Russ Feingold's not part of the problem. But do you think it appropriate to ask folks like that why it is that their majority leader is allowing them to be treated as if they are a minority party?
Well, they're going to give you a very tactful answer.
I'm sure.
I think the only person I've seen who's pretty much 100% frank is Bernie Sanders, who's actually an independent from Vermont senator. After all, Reid is the majority leader. My own theory on that is, you know, Democrats are very different than Republicans. Republicans tend to respect hierarchy and authoritarianism in their structure. So when you have a leader like Mitch McConnell or Boehner in the House, you can get absolute unanimous votes, as they did on many issues. The House voted in a unanimous way, except for one guy who's in a Democratic district in Louisiana on health care reform.
Right, Congressman Cal.
And He only did that because he's a free congressman, Republican congressman, since William Jefferson, who had been there, was indicted. So if he wants to stay in, he's got to vote Democratic. The Democrats would elect someone like Harry Reid because he will allow them to do what they want. That's what they like about him, that he won't assert authority, that he won't tell Joe Lieberman, look, we're going to cut you off from your chairmanship unless you, you know, get some religion here and vote with the party, or tell Don Nelson that, or Mary Landrieu or Blanche Lincoln. You don't find these sort of, freelancers in the Republican Party, but you do in the Democratic Party, and that's why they voted for Harry Reid. They don't want someone who's strong and willful. And then you're not going to find a Democratic senator who's going to tell you that, but that's the reality. If they vote for a completely opposite reason the Republicans vote.
That's almost passive-aggressive.
It is. It is passive-aggressive behavior, because everyone, once in a while, Harry Reid, you know, sounds like he's going to get tough, but he doesn't. Like he said yesterday, the Republicans should stop crying because the Democrats might use the reconciliation process, the simple majority, to pass what's left of health care reform. But usually he, you know, his bark is much larger than his bite. His bite is rarely strong. They just passed the jobs bill, but the jobs bill was so watered down, $15 billion. I mean, look what we gave. We gave $2 trillion to bail out Wall Street. We've given $15 billion for a jobs program. I don't think that's fair to middle America or to Main Street America. It was so watered down that even some Republicans voted for it, so they could say they voted for, you know, jobs for their community.
And it's not limited, though, Mark, to the Senate side, although that's the focus of a lot of folks' ire. It happens on the House side as well. I'm being reminded, for instance, of the fact that Bart Stupak is still holding health care hostage in the House by having a tantrum. And frankly, if he were a Republican pulling that, he would have no committee assignments that would be worth the paper they were printed on. I'm not an authoritarian either, but at some point in time, if you want the things that you want to be free to have happen, you've got to work in an orderly fashion. I'm reminded of the line from the song that freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose.
And that's absolutely true. I do think that Nancy Pelosi is a stronger leader than Harry Reid. I think that she has gotten, I think she said, like 290 bills out of the House that the Senate hasn't considered. And I think the House has functioned fairly well in terms of getting Democratic bills that benefit the common good, and that's the key thing, out of the House, even though there are obstructionists on certain issues like Bart Stupak. But the Senate has just been a disaster because the Democrats are so fearful of the Republicans. Whenever the Republicans say, well, we're going to filibuster, well, then Harry Reid moves that bill off the calendar, and it just goes to the end of the queue. He's scared of just a threat. Well, let them filibuster, or, as Senators Udall and some others have proposed, eliminate the filibuster. Just get it over with. Think of how far along we would have been as a nation this past year if there were no filibuster in the Senate. We would have gotten a tremendous number of bills. Some of those 290 that passed through the House that were socially progressive passed in the Senate. But the Democrats act like they're the minority party, that you need a 60-vote majority, not a 50. This is a democracy. Majority wins.
And the fact that Harry Reid dismissed out of hand, Mark, out of hand, any notion geared toward changing that rule, it's an indication to me that he's, I don't know if you want to use the language of the Godfather, he's not a wartime consigliere.
No, he's not, and I think also we have a problem. The last House I'm sorry, Senate Majority Leader, who was a Democrat, Tom Daschle. Both of them are from red states, although Nevada is somewhat.
And they both led in similar fashion.
Yeah, and they both, in Reed, unfortunately, will probably be defeated. I mean, the polls are showing, unless there's some miraculous turnaround. Part of that, I think, is both Daschle and Reed mistake content and form. And what I mean by that is even Americans who might disagree with you politically tend to respect strength in leadership. Not tyrannical strength, but you want a president of the United States or a Senate majority leader to show strength. You want them to be at a table in a room and they seem like the most powerful person in that room. And that's not what you get with Harry Reid, and to a certain extent that's not what you get with President Obama. And I think that's a big problem for leadership, because it's not leadership. It's something else. It's pacifying the Democratic senators who want a weak leader.
Or perhaps, if we're a little bit more charitable, Mark, it is consensus-based. It is consensus-based process as opposed to top-down authoritarian process. Well, within the scope of this discussion, then, or this topic, if you take the model of what happened with the meeting in Harrisburg, and try to expand that to happening in multiple states, do you think that these, for lack of a better word, wishy-washy Democrats would sit up and take notice?
You would think so, but I don't think they quite understand what we've been discussing. They tend to believe, they bought into actually and accepted the Republican means to a great extent. Otherwise, they would overpower the Republicans simply because they have the majority vote and establish policies that most of the American public agrees with. But they actually believe the Republicans, because that's what these Democrats hear on television, that's what they see in the mainstream media, is these framing devices about how America allegedly thinks. And they actually believe that, and they get scared. You have someone like Rahm Emanuel, who's the closest advisor to the president, who thinks that there's this mythical center in the United States. I don't know what that is, because this is a country that always evolves. Even if you don't talk about a specific issue, one of the strengths of America has been change, our industrial revolution, our new technology. We've always moved forward. So there is no permanent fixed center in the United States politically. It's where a leader brings the country. And the Obama administration and Harry Reid tend to think that there's some marker out there in America that defines the political center. And it's really what they're buying into is what the Republicans say the political center is. Most polls show that Americans support a single-payer system.
Yes.
I mean, that's just fact. Poll after poll shows that. And yet the Democrats, including the White House, keep espousing that the political center set isn't even for a public option, let alone universal health care. So they buy into this inside the beltway perspective on the rest of America that's not an accurate perspective. It's a distorted prism.
Well, in that case, and going back to the media issue, and George Lakoff and framing, for instance, I know BuzzFlash gets it because you guys do some of the most delightful snark on the internet, and you do it in little itty bitty snippets. I get a hoot every day out of reading y'all's tweets.
Well, thank you. Encourage everyone on the Horn to read BuzzFlash and donate to the Horn, and also buy premium progressive premiums from BuzzFlash. You get a gift, and you help keep us alive because, like you, we are struggling financially.
Well, can I ask you? I don't know what you how you do the premium process, Mark. But have you offered Jeff Biggers Reckoning at Eagle Creek yet as a premium on BuzzFlash?
No, I'm not aware of that.
It is an absolutely brilliant book. You know my work in regard to coal and so forth.
Right.
It is an absolutely brilliant book, and Jeff Biggers is, of course, an Illinois author. And he has written an absolutely magnificent piece of history and analysis about the area where he grew up in southern Illinois that has been turned into a toxic wasteland and the cost that we all pay for it. It's called Reckoning at Eagle Creek. And if you could get that out there as a premium for your BuzzFlash readers, I think people's minds would be absolutely blown to learn what's going on right under their noses, especially your Illinois readers.
Well, as a favor to you alone, we'll do that. Within the next couple of weeks, I will get it up.
Well, wonderful. And just one last thing, since I'm sitting here being presumptive, I know that the nomination process for your Wings of Justice Award is usually done in writing, but I'd like to do one, you know, now. Here in West Virginia, we have a situation where young people have put their own bodies and their own well-being at profound risk in the effort to stop mountaintop removal. There are some, I believe, as of our conversation right now, who are still rotting in jail because the courts of this state are being used as a leverage by the coal industry to impose sanctions on these peaceful protesters. For instance, and what they're doing, Mark, is they're using unreasonable bails in order to keep these protesters under lock and key. For instance, setting a $5,000 cash only bail. That means the whole $5,000 has to be put up in order for these young people to get out of jail. At the same time that they're setting $3,000 surety bonds for child molesters.
And this was, if I recall, this had to do with a arrest on a Massey call.
Yes, exactly. Purely an act of civil disobedience. But I am manifestly impressed by the heroism being shown by these folks.
Is there a group that's doing that?
Climate Ground Zero.
Climate Ground Zero. I think we'll accept your nomination over the phone because I did read about that. And quite honestly, you know, I think as we sort of come full circle back to this issue that it is civil disobedience, I think, that is one of the tools that's going to have to be used to bring about change. We're all, including myself, much too passive and rely on the written word. But the struggles that became successful in America in terms of legislation didn't start in Washington, D.C. with the passage of a bill. They ended with the passage of a bill. If you look at the abolitionist movement, the suffragette, women's suffragette movement, of course, the civil rights movement, all of those, the gay rights movement, all of those began as movements. And it took years of people sometimes being killed in the civil rights movement, and certainly in the abolitionist movement. Marches for the women's suffragette movement, strikes for the union movement. It was only as a result of that and people being killed in the 30s and in the 20s and even before that in the labor movement before we saw union protection legislation in Congress. But Congress just didn't change things. People were out on the street in movements and that resulted in every one of the cases I've mentioned in legislation. In the case of the abolitionist movement, it resulted in a civil war. But it did ultimately free people from human bondage, from slavery. So I think we've got the cart before the horse here, where we thought by electing Obama, well, he'll just get everything done now. We won't really have to do a whole lot. Nothing is going to change dramatically unless there are movements. And those people who are from Climate Ground Zero are part of a movement of change. Arrests, that's what we saw in the civil rights movement. We saw killings in the civil rights movement. We saw beatings. And it was a years-long process that began a long time ago, but basically in the early 50s. Sit-ins, Louisa Parks, marches in Selma, Alabama, And all of this finally led to civil rights legislation, the Voting Rights Act also, in the 60s, championed by a Southern Democrat, Lyndon Johnson, who I believe would not have championed these things if there was not a social movement where people had put themselves on the line. So let the Climate Ground Zero movement, you know, they will get a Wings of Justice award, but let them be an example of what we're all going to have to do if we really want to see change. Because we're not, we really reversed the historical precedent in thinking that legislation will begin the change. Legislation usually comes as the end of social change and social movements.
Well, I will, I'll shoot you a note after the program, Mark, just to give you the particulars on that, because there's two groups at work there. One's Climate Ground Zero, and the other is Mountain Justice, and they're both full of absolutely stunningly brave young people. I love the conversations that we have on air. I think this is the second one we've had. And anytime you feel like a little long form confab, do feel free to give me a yell, because these are issues that are absolutely critical to whether we succeed or fail, and I would hope determine the means by which we go forward. You guys at BuzzFlash are doing magnificent work, and you have for what, 10 years? Is it 10 years?
This is our 10th year, but like you, we're financially stretched. We've had to lay off our 2 senior people in the last year. I think, unfortunately, social progressives, we've been very fortunate that many people support us. We do give, I mean, they're buying products. We just say, buy progressive books, DVDs, fair trade, union-made stuff if we can get it, ecological products to make for a cleaner society. Buy them from us instead of Amazon. That's all we say. And instead of Amazon getting the profit, we use the money to run BuzzFlash. So we don't get those free. We have to pay for them.
Sure.
But we think this is a model that should work. Well, that's simply all that people have to do is, if you're a progressive, instead of going to Amazon, come to BuzzFlash and buy that book from BuzzFlash. And will you turn it into advocacy journalism? I mean, we're running advocacy initiatives on a skeletal staff now. Most part-time, because we can't afford anything more. And we're in jeopardy right now, financial jeopardy of survival on our 10th year, because a lot of progressives have gone to sites that use advertisers. There's a main site now, The Nation, that's offering, and I respect The Nation deeply, they have financial problems, but they're offering an affinity credit card. I don't understand that. I mean, I love The Nation, what's in it.
As do I.
But when you start offering affinity credit cards, that kind of undercuts your ability to talk about the whole problem of debt in this nation and how workers since the 90s have had static income or lowered income, and what's compensated for that is the Wall Street gets the money they should have got, because these workers have to go into debt with their credit cards and by through borrowing. So I think it's not appropriate for as prestigious a publication as The Nation to be offering an infinite credit card. They are driven to that, I assume, because they have financial problems too. Ours are much more severe. They're made out of survival. I think The Nation will get money. They're going to get it from this credit card, because every time someone spends, they get a percentage. But they're getting locked into the same syndrome of telling people, oh, spend, spend, spend on the credit card, and, you know, accumulate debt, and The Nation will make money. Well, that's not what we want to be part of at BuzzFlash. You know, again, I respect The Nation's content. They do wonderful books. The book you mentioned, I was checking as we were talking, and that's published by The Nation. They do wonderful stuff. But we, as progressives, have to understand that if we keep giving money and accepting this corporate system, and not all corporations are bad, but the big corporations, they, in particular the financial bloodsuckers like the credit card companies, if we participate in that, we're giving them credibility, and we're saying that's all right. when in fact the whole structure of the credit card system, which forces lower wage workers in particular into ongoing debt, even bankruptcy, is something we have to fight against. And once we start offering credit cards, we've given up the fight, because we're saying the only way we can survive is to survive off of the same debt-inducing system that the credit card companies have structured to prey on the working people of America and all Americans, and say accumulating debt is fine, just pay us 33% interest and you can live out your dreams. Just make a small monthly payment. But of course the interest starts to far outweigh the principal. And, that should be what you're getting in a higher salary, not your debt. So at BuzzFlash and at the Horn, you know, we're purists and we suffer for it financially. And, you know, it's a question of whether it'll stay alive. But the corporation would love to see us go under, love to see the Horn go under. And progressives really have to financially support their convictions. Otherwise, these big corporations have the money and the power, and they will continue to dominate our government.
Well, Mark, this has been a wonderful conversation, and I will see to it that I cut out the audio and make that available to you. So if you want to direct folks to it on the BuzzFlash site, they can have it.
Absolutely.
And I will be in touch with you after the show about not only the Wings of Justice issue, but a couple of other things that I think we touched on that we might flesh out to the betterment of the idea of independent liberal media relatively painlessly on both of our parts. So Mark Carlin from BuzzFlash.com, I thank you very kindly, and by all means consider yourself as having an open and welcome door here at the Horn, and just keep setting them up and knocking them down, and give a big old hug to whoever your chief snarkmeister is, because like I said, I love the tweets, and I think folks should sign up and follow BuzzFlash at Twitter. If for no other reason than just the volume of information you get every day.
Yeah, I would emphasize Twitter. We have a huge following on Twitter. We just crossed 15,600. There's only a couple progressive publications ahead of us. The Alternate, Truth Out, Raw Story, Common Dreams are all way behind us. And we're very interactive with our community on Twitter. We love them, and we're keep growing very quickly on Twitter, because Twitter is a chance for people to engage with each other and not just post your own articles. We post articles from all sorts of publications. We're there to provide information, insight, thoughts. I even commented when I was at the Progressive Summit for the panel, the Keystone Progress, it was sort of funny because I was talking to you, and I don't know if you noticed that we finished talking. We were sitting in a couple of armchairs at the hotel there, the Sheraton in Harrisburg, and there was someone who had been in my panel, was waiting across the hall for us to finish, a younger man. And when we finished, I got up and crossed over and extended my hand. When you and I finished our conversation, I sent my hand to shake the hand of this young man, and all of a sudden another hand shook it from behind me. So, you know, I was a little bit surprised. So I turned around to see who shook my hand, and it was our inspector, who looked like he just walked out of a wax museum. And then he said, "Well, when I see a hand extended to shake, I'm a U.S. senator, so I'm going to shake it." And so
you do Arlen Specter very well, Mark.
And so he shook my hand. I said, "Well, Senator, I'm from Illinois, so I really couldn't vote for you in any case." And he said, "Sir, I'm a United States senator, so I represent everyone in this nation." And then he walked.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, Mark, I didn't even have my hand out later on that evening, and he just came up and grabbed it and started, and I just looked at that because, you know, I'm a genial guy, but, you know, don't just grab me. I'm a hillbilly. We don't take kindly to that.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there just, you know, pumping my hand out. Well, Senator, wish you were a liberal.
He's an amazing guy. He does look like a wax devil. I just, it was sort of a kick, and it coincidentally occurred just after we had finished our conversation at the Pennsylvania Progressive Summit. I encourage all your listeners. I know that when we wrote that article on BuzzFlash about you, you got tremendous complimentary comments underneath it from loyal head radio listeners. And, we want to, as you say, and we discussed in Pennsylvania, do more to promote those of us who have tried our best to be non-corporate and to be grassroots and to represent a government by the people, of the people, and for the people. And let's continue to see what we can do together.
Well, hear, hear, Mark. Thank you very kindly. And I think I've probably moved over into your dinner hour, so I apologize. But it's been a wonderful conversation. And
it always is. And I love the horn, and many BuzzFlash readers do. And I can only hope that that there'll be growth and that the money will come in to make it even a more powerful force in the nation.
Hear, hear. Mark Carlin, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob.
Take care.
Okay, so long. Bye.
Bye now. And from BuzzFlash.com, that is Mark Carlin, the buzz in BuzzFlash. BuzzFlash has been around for every bit of 10 years, and like us, we're in the same boat, so we may as well try to row in the same direction, if you know what I mean, because you're not going to find any Preparation H ads on BuzzFlash, and you're not going to find them on the horn either. So thank you to Mark Carlin, and by all means, really, BuzzFlash has a serious Twitter following, and for good reason. It's some of the best tweeting going on out there, even though I'm still left feeling a little odd by talking about tweeting, you know. So we find ourselves halfway through this Prayer Meeting Wednesday edition of The Horn, and we're going to take a break. And seeing as how we were rather tied up with other stuff last night, and of course Tuesdays and Thursdays are our Green News Report nights, I don't think last night's Green News Report has gone stale in less than 24 hours. So we'll give a listen to that, because I just hate missing it, and the only way I get to listen is, you know, on the radio, just like you. So Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen are on their way with the Green News Report, and then we'll come back with your calls. You know the number. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Don't. Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, February 23, 2010.
Going green in Vancouver. Early spring in Japan. Slow boats to China. EPA under fire.
Today, the state of Texas is taking its challenge to the EPA.
Plus,
I'm not dead.
He said he's not dead. Yes, he is.
Climate change legislation is still alive.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It all went off without a hitch, except for one massive hitch. The lighting of the Olympic torch. Evidently, one of the columns had its hydraulics freeze. On the plus side, something was frozen in Vancouver.
This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is brought to you by Velvet Revolution's Disbar Torture Lawyers campaign. The DOJ Inspector General has now found that Bush's attorneys, John Yoo and Jay Bybee, committed professional misconduct in approving torture and other war crimes. But the DOJ refuses to refer the findings to state bar associations. So VR will. Please sign on and support this important campaign for accountability at disbartorturelawyers.com. That's disbartorturelawyers.com. Okay, Des, what do you have for us today?
Well, a lot of quick hits. First, the Vancouver Olympic Committee is making good on their pledge to make these 2010 Winter Games the most sustainable so far, even down to the medals. A Canadian electronics waste recycler extracted medals from discarded televisions, cell phones, and other gadgets, and those were then melted down and made into medals for the winners.
So those aren't really gold medals and silver medals?
No, they are. They're taken. Gold is used in most consumer electronics.
Really?
Speaking of electronics waste, it's a growing problem as ever more millions of consumer electronics are discarded every year. Consumer electronics are filled with toxic metals and chemicals that contaminate the air and water if they're not properly recycled. A new study from the United Nations Environmental Program estimates poor countries in the next few years will see a 400 to 500% increase in toxic electronic waste dumped improperly in their countries from the West. So be sure to dispose of your electronics responsibly. Global shipping companies can save on the expense of moving cargo by slowing down, literally a slow boat to China. Although slower cruising speeds slightly increased transit time, global shipping giant Maersk said the change paid for itself. Maximizing fuel efficiency saved a third on their fuel costs for container ships, allowing them to cut their prices in a very competitive market.
So they went slower, used less fuel, but didn't that take more time and therefore cost them money?
Yes, it did take more time, but the fuel savings more than made up for it, and they say it paid for itself.
Interesting.
In Japan, the arrival of the cherry blossoms has been tracked over centuries, and they're blooming earlier and earlier every year. Japan's meteorological agency confirms a clear trend of earlier spring blossoming. Last year's nationwide celebrations were caught off guard when the trees blossomed nearly a week ahead of scheduled festivities. So this year, bookies say business is booming for bets on the first day of blooms. Peer Pressure Works, a pilot program from an electric utility company in the Northeast, discovered that energy conservation jumps when residents' electric bills show them how much electricity they use compared to their neighbors.
So when people see how much their neighbors are saving, they want to do the same thing. Is that the premise?
That's how it works.
Interesting.
Although the focus in Washington and the media is on health insurance reform this week, Reuters is reporting that the Senate's climate and clean energy bill is not dead yet. Three senators, Democratic Senator John Kerry of Massachusetts, Independent Joe Lieberman of Connecticut, and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, all say they will present compromise legislation this week. President Obama's announcement last week of $8 billion in new federal funding for nuclear power was supposed to attract Senate moderates to the bill, but coal state Democrats like Max Baucus of Montana are pushing for delay.
Yeah, they're talking about a compromise bill. The initial bill was already a compromise, with Democrats compromising amongst themselves. And now they're going to compromise even further, but I guess we should be happy that something's moving forward.
And that's even in question as well. If the Senate is unable to pass climate legislation before the November elections, the Obama administration has said it will use the Environmental Protection Agency's authority to regulate air pollution through the Clean Air Act. But the EPA is under fire on two fronts. Senator Lisa Murkowski, Republican of Alaska, is introducing legislation to block the EPA entirely from enforcing provisions of the Clean Air Act under their endangerment finding, again, with help from Senate Democrats like Louisiana Senator Mary Landrieu. Landrieu's move has caught ire in her own state, where progressive group Catholics United is running ads against her. The EPA is also under attack in the courts. 16 groups filed challenges in federal court on Friday, the deadline for such actions, seeking to block the EPA from greenhouse gas emissions regulations. The suits are brought by various industries, conservative think tanks, and business groups, including the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Republican lawmakers, and four states, including Texas.
We are challenging the EPA's findings for CO2 and other greenhouse gases, and we are taking it to the federal courthouse.
That was Texas Governor Rick Perry fighting to not keep our environment clean. Read more about that and the stories we didn't get to today at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Follow us day and night on Twitter and download us anytime on iTunes. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
My buddies tell me that I should have waited. They say I'm missing a whole world of fun. But I still love them and I sing with pride. I like the Christian life. I won't lose a friend. Others find pleasure in things I despise. I like the Christian life. My buddies shun me since I turned to Jesus. They say I'm missing a whole world of fun. I live without them
Radio, the Horde and the Birds. The Christian Life on Prayer Meeting Wednesday. I'm Brother Bob. God, DJing's the dang much fun. And you know what? The first tune being by request from David in Tennessee, followed by the Birds, by request from Reverbo. And you know what? It's really cool because the way the loop closes, because the Stones influenced the Birds, and then if you listen to that song, I swear, you can hear what 9 or 10 years later will turn into a Stones tune. What do I mean? Let me see if I can just sort of make this close this loop. Yeah. So Stones influenced the Birds, and then the Birds, 9 years later or so, ten years later, turn into this. You hear what I mean?
Sunday morning through Baker's Field, listening to gospel music on the college radio station. And the preacher said, you know, you always have the Lord by your side. And I was so pleased to be informed of this that I ran 20 red lights in his honor. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Lord. I had an arrangement to be
Amen and amen. Hallelujah. And thank you to them young British gentlemen, the good Christian boys that they are. Hallelujah for the girl with faraway eyes. Thank you, Keith Richard. Thank you, Mick Jagger. And Keith, would you please stay out of the communion wine? Ha! Glory. Quick email before we go back to the phones. Got a couple of lines open if you want to jump in and get in line. If you do it now, we've got a chance to get everybody on the air instead of waiting until like 15 minutes before the show ends, which is your habit. Not that I'm griping. I got a great email in from Michael in Norway. Lots of food for thought in this. And you know, I love hearing from you guys. Hey, Bob, finally I'm able to listen to the horn again after months of being blocked from any possibility of following the show. See, my landlord figured that she would block all non-HTTP traffic to the router to stop us from using torrents and other possible download services online. But that also meant no streaming radio, no chatting, no podcasting, no online gaming, no file transfer, no anything other than plain web browsing. That's what happens when amateurs try to play internet traffic moderators. And all that crap just to have us stop sharing files. Anyway, Michael says, I've really enjoyed the last installment of The Horn as I have a particular interest in regards to media and journalism. My bachelor's degree is in media studies, and ever since I graduated in 2003, I've been rather fascinated by this character Rupert Murdoch and the bizarre media outlet Fox News. I clearly remember my first encounter with this network as that occurred right after September 11th, 2001. This was while I was analyzing various television news media as a course project to see how the coverage varied in regards to use of language, editing, interviews, scope, balance, juxtaposition, etc. Basically, we were on the lookout for various forms of misrepresentation such as suggestive editing, hyped level of significance, limited scope of focus, and so on. God, you went to the textbook source, Michael, for all of that. Fox. The point of the exercise, he says, was to make us aware of all the little variations in form of presentation that may reflect a bias, the purpose of which was surely to make us responsible future media personnel. Anyway, so there I was with my notepad and remote control, trying to notice and compare all these slight variations that may suggest something about the program's ideological leanings. Eventually, I got to Fox News, and suddenly all these slight variations weren't so slight anymore. That little ball-peen hammer had done turned into a cudgel. Needless to say, I could not take notes fast enough with all these journalistic no-nos being perpetrated in quick succession. I ended up putting the notepad away after a while, just watching Bill O'Reilly conducting something that didn't much resemble an interview. I felt pretty certain I was witnessing this guy's last day at work, thinking he must be having a mental breakdown on the live on TV. I'd already been acquainted with Rupert Murdoch through the literature at the university, having read quite a bit about his media dealings in the UK bolstering Thatcherism. Imagine my surprise when I figured out that he was behind this absurdity named Fox News, too. Now, after years of observing and pondering the American media, I do not any longer believe Rupert Murdoch merely represents a rebellion against journalistic principles. I believe his dealings in media are a rather sophisticated political tactic to skew not only the public discourse, but all news media towards the right. Oh, the first toaster of the night goes out to Michael. Yes. Sure, one can argue that the corporate media adapts its form from dependency on advertisement revenue, but that is not the only aspect the news media has to adapt in accordance to. A very simple, but obvious dependency a news outlet has, is the need to be taken seriously. Unfortunately, that necessarily entails showing consideration for people's prejudice. This is because presenting something that flies in the face of people's preconceived notions will only serve to degrade the media outlet's reputation. This will regrettably be the result of the information being factually sound. Paying attention here? This is like a thesis. This is good stuff. The news media is therefore at the mercy of the public's preconceptions and misconceptions. Thus, an overwhelmingly misinformed public would be quite near impossible to put straight. Hypothetically, if you run a newspaper in a country that is predominantly racist, reporting news that contradicts these racist views would be commercial suicide. And just throwing in my own aside here to these brilliant observations,
that's why the commerciality has no business operating inside any kind of newsroom that purports to be engaged in real, live, honest-to-God, who, what, when, where, why, how much journalism. Because the answer to every one of those questions will eventually be, because Preparation H paid us to advertise. Or, well, not to, that's kind of unfair. A lot of people get some relief, I guess. But more particularly, because the guys at Buy Gold Now paid us to advertise. You ever notice that there's never a story on Fox about gold prices when they fall? And they do. I mean, they fluctuate. It's not always up, 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 up. But those ads just keep rolling and rolling and rolling. Buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your best investment against hedging against inflation and cannibalism. Anyway, I'm sorry I intruded on Michael's otherwise trenchant thoughts. When Fox News are pumping out questionable information, they're not merely emboldening the target audience, but are also legitimizing their misconceptions. Denouncing these misconceptions thereby becomes a risky business, as credibility is not only jeopardized in the eyes of conservatives, but also in the eyes of their friends and family that might not be that politically engaged. And therein lies a trigger, of course. This is the digital equivalent of an aerosolized weapon of mass destruction. It is, in fact, what our good friend Matt Osborne at OsborneInc.com would call a weapon of mass distraction. Indeed, indeed. Hence, says Michael, the entire news media structure would necessarily tilt off its axis towards the right when presented with such an extreme as Fox News. That such a move also benefits advertisement is just a bonus. This is also why I'm very concerned about the dealings of the Texas School Board. There is little doubt in my mind that the highly biased history books there that they are proposing will shape the way news is reported when the concerned pupils eventually become news consumers. I therefore believe the American liberals are not only fighting an ideological opponent, but actually fighting to keep the conservatives from pulling the wool permanently over the eyes of every American, creating a nation of misinformed conservabots. And this is me again, which, of course, is their intent. And P.S. to that Swede. See, this is what happens when you bring the Norwegians and the Swedes into the... To that Swede who was bragging about beating Norway in the Olympics. You may have the gold, but our curling team has the coolest pants. Oh, and Bob, what's your deal complaining about Norwegian weather? See what happens to me? Look, I'm in a bad weather... I don't mean bad weather. I am in a bad weather frame of mind. Here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Virginia, we probably haven't seen a hundredth of the snow that either Sweden or Norway has seen. But I can catch hell about it. I'm just tired of it. I'm tired because it doesn't... I'm just tired of it. But as Michael correctly notes, we have lots of beautiful weather here. And he is in agreement with Scott from Sweden, who said, you know, it's so beautiful here with all this snow. And he mentioned his dogs having to walk through it with their snouts up above the snow level like some sort of little canine U-boats. He said, it's so beautiful, I wonder why we ever dread it. So Michael says, we have lots of beautiful weather here. Remember, there is no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothing. And you just don't want me to go there. I have spent the entire winter looking for one pair of pants. I have just bad clothing. I have the perfect pair of pants for this kind of weather. It's canvas on the outside. It's got a layer of insulation and a layer of Gore-Tex, and you can't be cold in them. Can't find them. And, of course, because my son's feet are growing like kudzu right now, can't keep him out of my good winter boots. So that's true. No such thing as bad weather, just bad clothing. And I'm cursed with it. Cursed, I tell you. Cursed. Have you priced a pair of, Carhartt pants with Thinsulate and Gore-Tex? You don't want to. Jesus, it's expensive. And probably made in some sweatshop in China. But anyway, great email. Thank you. Thank you, Michael. And we will roll on to the phones right now and see who's been waiting. Hey, welcome to the program.
My name is Arlen Spector, and I do not support calling me a wax figure.
What's up, Spike?
I'd like to wish you a gonzo greetings. What's going on?
Well, you know what? I think Mark's got him a little better than you, but that ain't bad.
Well, I've been hearing him since I was a little kid, so I ought to be able to imitate him.
Well, you know, can you, at the dinner table, he probably sounds hostile when he's asking to, pass the creamed peas.
So that's how we talk in Pennsylvania. It's not like we're particularly sweet up here. We'll pound anyone we feel like at sporting events. Are you kidding me? We have a judge at the infield for NASCAR races here at Pocono.
And then there's the batteries.
We had him at Eagles games at the Vet, and they still have him at the Link. You know, the Steelers fans can be just as bad. We're Pennsylvania, man. Don't look at us funny. No one's beaten us yet. We've won every war we've sided on.
There's a reason WVU fans hate Pitt. You know, the Monongahela River rises in northern West Virginia and flows northward to meet the Allegheny and form the Ohio. And anywhere south of the Mason-Dixon line in West Virginia, there's an old sage joke. You know, why does the Monongahela River flow north? Pitt sucks.
Well. The American Revolution didn't happen until they came and to Philly and tried it there. The South kind of came to an end essentially once they came into our borders. So, we do have a little bit of a chip on our shoulders, and no one's quite knocked it off of us yet when it comes to.
Oh, without a doubt. And of course,
Pennsylvania is going to hold their own.
And, you know, God knows I love Pittsburgh. It's actually one of my favorite American cities. Except when there are basketball games or football games involving West Virginia University at stake. Yeah, and I'm being reminded by our real preacher, Tobias. He says Pennsylvania is living proof that hell is full and the damned roam the earth. So
it's central Pennsylvania.
You've started something, Spike.
Yeah, well, Central Pennsylvania votes Pat Toomey, but they'll get their asses kicked in a general election. So, yeah.
I hope you're right.
But, that reminds me real quick, a few national stories that can all loosely involve me in the 6 degrees of separation, or some manner or another. One is in the Philadelphia area with that school spying on students, which kind of borders on pedophilia at work.
Yeah, that was a little creepy.
Yeah, that's in Montgomery County.
Yeah, flesh out the details if you don't mind.
Yeah, Montgomery County is like hardcore Republican Philadelphia suburbs. Most of Philly burbs is very red Republican. Montgomery County is like redneck Republican Philly suburbs. I mean, lots of like kind of white trash towns outside of Philly. Conshohocken is the biggest one that comes to mind. Although I think Mike Piazza, by the way, grew up in Montgomery County. Because I'm almost positive Norristown is there. And so Tommy Lasorda is from there, too. So give me an idea just kind of like what part of the Philly area Montgomery County is. It's the kind of place where people listen to Glenn Beck and think he has a valid point. So public school system is spying on children.
Didn't he rise to prominence out of the Philly market?
No, I think Tampa. That's where my mother's family's from. That's real residence.
Okay, maybe I'm thinking of Michael Smirkanish.
Yes, that's what you're thinking of. Cue ball, D-bag, yeah.
D-nozzle.
Yeah, that's WIP. WIP sucks. The only time I put them on is the one night a week they have a Phillies game on. The rest of the week they have him, they have Beck, they have Savage. That's the station that brings Savage to the Philadelphia media market. It's part of course, the CBS conglomerate of radio broadcasting, essentially. Clear Channel. Yes, Smirkanoff is from Philly, sadly. They are a lot of right-wingers in the burbs of Philly. They struggle to win elections in the city, though, because they're highly outnumbered by people of the middle to left. So think about it. I mean, it's a right-wing school district spying on their children, just what right-wingers would do. Just like the crazy places in the South that are so right-wing, their school districts are essentially publicly funded church schools where everyone has to go outside and pray before school, since it's against the law to do it in the school, but you can force everyone outside to do it. No shock at all. But the other thing is I do find this very amusing, the news coverage, a little bit, on this Toyota recall, especially since I have a car not involved in any of this, and they've actually always been really kind of good about my car. They were several different things they recalled and just changed on the car in the first few years I owned it. And I also remember I would get surveys from private companies asking if I was having troubles with certain things. And one of them was I do clearly remember one asking if the throttle was going to be stuck on my engine, which I have a driver stick, so I just push in the clutch.
There isn't an advantage to that stick shift.
Yeah, by the way, no one's mentioned. All these cars involved are automatics, which, Toyota, I've actually, as a Toyota enthusiast, and a lot of Toyota enthusiasts have been enraged by the fact that Toyota has lowered production on stick vehicles over the last
Year. BartCop over at BartCop.com is just plain old pissed that anybody's saying anything bad about Toyota.
Well, I've had this car, I bought this car in December 2000. Biggest things I had is I had to replace the clutch, and I burned out the wiring harness to the one headlight, so I had to replace that. And that in 10 years, that's basically other than tires and
Spike, if the whole Toyota thing turned out to be a marketing test to determine Toyota owner loyalty, I think they couldn't be more than thrilled to death with the response they're getting, because Toyota loyalists are out there, and I haven't seen responses like this since the last time I saw two good old boys, one a Ford guy and the other a Chevy guy, get pulled apart in a bare knuckled brawl over which was best.
Well, I used to work on cars for a living, and most of your Toyotas are the same basic four cylinder engine, and they're extremely easy to. For years, were extremely easy to work on.
Well, see, Toyota, in the years following the Second World War, Toyota rose up using the Henry Ford model. Do a lot of different things with the same things.
They also had to build the FJ Cruiser came about because they started building the Willys Jeeps for Willys, and then that ended, so they built their own version of the Jeep, which was one of their best-selling early American vehicles, the early FJ Cruiser.
Oh my God! If you were watching. National Geographic specials like I was growing up in the 70s and into the 80s. The only automobiles in Africa, I think, were Toyota Land Cruisers.
Or the Land Rover from England. Those are basically the only two vehicles you could find,
The Paris to Dakar rally was a two-car affair. Range Rovers and Land Cruisers.
Yeah. The biggest problem I think they've had over the last maybe 10 years especially is, from the looks of it, they involved more and more, this will make me sound like a real villainous anti-American here, they've involved more and more American businessmen in their affairs, and I think the problem is the culture of American corporate America has overtaken, and that's maybe where some of their problems have come from there. The funny thing is, I never had any throttle issue because I have a mechanical line throttle for my car, which if you work on your own car, it's a hell of a lot easier to deal with. But when I was a driving school instructor, I drove a Civic with a throttle more similar to that, and I had that problem a few times with that because we had to use automatics at driving school, and I would put it in neutral, and it would go down again. And we had brought that car to the shop a few times, and the dealership apparently was a little puzzled as to what could have been causing it. So I find that slightly interesting. And Hondas are also being made more here, too. You know, the big thing with the Republicans is, as a Honda enthusiast, I know that I basically think that most of their plants are in heavily Republican districts. The truck plant in Northern California is, I think, IZA. That is a UAW plant, though.
And I was just looking in the chat room, and I think it was Sparky who noted that, yeah, that's a UAW plant, and Toyota closed down the only UAW plant in California.
Yeah.
Sparky is not real happy.
Yeah.
Sparky's a good union man.
But they went to the South, essentially, because the Southerners wouldn't be interested, really, in joining you, because they're Southerners, and they're listening to BS right-wing propaganda. But, you know, there is an interesting twist in that all these numbers that thrown out there are at best putting them on an all-time par with the American mix. Let's look back to Lee Iacocca, a Lehigh University product I'd like to add there in my distaste for Lehigh University and their right-wing BS institute. College, like, it's almost like Liberty University. You can take courses on intelligent design there. Go Leopards, go Lafayette. You have Lee Iacocca with the Mustang, with the drop-in gas tank. And that was the start of that bad gas tank that Ford continued to use into the 70s in the Pinto. And it took forever for the Pinto to get recalled. And so finally the Pinto got recalled. But to this day, there's never been a recall on the first generation Mustang gas tank, which...
Oh, God, no. That's a $50,000 car now, isn't it?
Yeah. You got people dropping 60 to nearly 100 grand sometimes on these Mustangs with these potential bombs in the back seat, which is just insane to think that we get to that design on the street. You GM for, 20 years... We're putting the gas tanks on the side. Granted, NBC sexed it up and put some explosives to finally make it happen. But there was the real issue that if you drove T-boned a GMC or Chevy pickup truck, you could potentially start a fire, especially if you had a car with a chrome bumper. And GM ignored that forever and ever and ever. And it's very interesting. You know, people have noted this. I think the only places you might have heard anything to this effect would be, I saw it on CBS, Katie Couric. The only other TV source that might give you something like this is Jon Stewart. But I think it was over the last 8 years, Toyota has spent $25 million in lobbying money. GM has spent $53 million. And then they didn't have money, and they asked the government for money. And isn't this interesting? They get all this money, now I sound like one of these right-wingers slightly, but there's a valid point to, isn't it interesting?
Well, there's a valid point to griping about Wall Street bonuses, too. I mean, offensive is offensive, and you don't have to be a Republican or a Democrat to know when you're getting a finger in your eye.
Yeah, isn't this interesting? Now we're getting, especially with all the advertising that GM and Ford do on American television, that we're getting this coverage making Toyota sound like the worst manufacturer ever. And in all actuality, first of all, sadly, a lot of these cars, even if they're non-union, they are made in America. The GM cars, very little of what they've been doing for the last 20 years has been in America. You know, what was left in Michigan's being shut down now, but that was a fraction of what it once was. They've shipped those jobs down to places like Brazil, South America, and they've produced some of the crummiest vehicles. And they turn around. And not only are they buying the politicians and buying the media, but they're using that influence to play business. I mean, that's what this whole news story is boiling down to. It's essentially GM's political power, a failing company that somehow has ridiculous clout, which is just absurd. I think we shouldn't take a corporation serious that essentially has... It's basically become, as bad as this to say, a communist organization in that it's more government-funded in one way or another than it is able to sell vehicles. I don't know how else to put it. I mean, GM is just buying stupidity. They're buying corruption, and no one calls them out on it because they advertise. And this is just
the you just made my point for me. And that is the pernicious effect of advertising on anything approaching journalistic ethics. I mean, isn't that what you just, don't you think?
Yeah, and I would also like to, this is going back in the time machine, but I went back on Florida Lee Iacocca, so it's fair to go after GM back in the 60s, too. You know, when Ralph Nader, you know, first hit big with go figure, car safety, and Detroit was very resistant then, GM hired private investigators to follow him to blackmail. And that's why he became a major stockholder in that company, was because, as part of the lawsuit, they had to give him so much in stocks because they were spying on a private individual who was calling them out. So they've had a really bad track history of playing dirty in this country. And it just makes me laugh that they're being portrayed in the media now as the Darwin heroes when, if anything else, they're Lex Luthor. I mean, they're the villain of all villains at work. And, you know, we used to be a loyal Pontiac family at one time, so that should give you an idea of just where I stand at this point on GM.
A little frustrated?
Essentially, my money goes into them, even though I hate their crap any longer.
Well, it's hard not to be frustrated. I mean, there are still, you know, there are still those bare-knuckle diehards out there, but they've made it. They've made a bed they're having to lie in, and they're still trying to get us to upgrade them to one of those Swedish mattresses they keep hearing about on the radio box. And it's frustrating as hell.
Yeah, that was the one that drove me nuts. I guess it was last summer, maybe last spring, when GM really started advertising on a few commercial progressive shows that I like. You know, Hartman was doing it. Malloy had some ads. You know, if you watch Roger and Me,
but you know what, I can understand those ads because that's the realm that Malloy and Hartman operate in. And I was frankly pleased to see them advertising with liberal broadcasters, because in years past that simply did not happen.
I think it was more just a cheap ploy to try to create buzz that they were further ahead on maybe more progressive thinking engineering than they are at this point.
And you know, while we're at it, just to point out one other thing that I'm hearing from David in Tennessee, doesn't it just beat all that the one car company in America that's actually on the rebound and doing okay is the inheritor of a Nazi sympathizer and a Bush crime family friend? That would be Ford.
Yeah.
You know, I was on my Facebook page the other day, and I forget whose thread I was commenting on or whatever. You know, sometimes I just kill time if I see an interesting topic. And lo and behold, I'm talking along, talking. And then this guy comes in and says, "You all need to recognize the right wing, these think tanks, for what they are." Like a dummy, I said, "And that would be? Front groups for the Zionists." So leave it alone, Bob. Leave it alone. Because and then the guy launches off into his Jews this, Jews that, bankers, blah, 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 and you know, uh-oh, we got one on the hook. And then launches into, "Henry Ford was right about them." Oh, great. Oh, I haven't seen one like you in a while, Buster.
Well, have you ever seen the animation that Ford made in the, I guess it was the 20s, making the unions the evil?
I haven't seen that, but I've read excerpts from that newspaper that he maintained that, frankly, would have made Adolf Hitler blush. That was, in fact, a model for some of Hitler's later journalistic enterprises, but, you know, never mind.
If you get a chance, there's a documentary that's out there, came out in 1979, about the Wobblies, the IWW. And in that documentary, they show that film footage. It's very inflaming and a bit absurd and extremely far right. Right at the end, it says, "Paid for by Ford Corporation." Yeah. You know, the funny thing, though, is the reason Ford got better, I guess, in the last 10 years is essentially foreigners took over. There were more Europeans at the top of their board than they were Americans. And they were thinking about, because they're dealing with other markets, like in Europe, they're thinking, you know, people in Europe were pushing for fuel efficiency 20 years ago. You know, Ronald Reagan didn't come in and push it away like in America. And so Ford was a little bit more thinking about more compact vehicles. The focus has been around, it came out at the same time as my car. Toyota foolishly stopped making my car. I get 45 miles a gallon, 80 miles an hour on the highway with it. They decided to make a heavier, more luxurious version that would suit more Americans. And put a
Barca lounger behind the steering wheel. I'm just hearing from David in Tennessee. He says, my mother would walk over broken glass to buy a Pontiac. That, and she helped open the GMAC office in Nashville. True story. Going back to 1934. That's the American archetype.
One time they were the car for performance car fans. I mean, they created the muscle car. Granted, there were some engine issues with fires and the Fieros, but I mean, there's still people, my uncle still owns one. He keeps it in the garage. He doesn't drive it anymore. You know, the Fieros, there's a cult for them still out there. I mean, heck, the 70s. I mean, come on, everyone, first they say Smokey and Bandit. Before that, I think of, which I watch in reruns, the Rockford Files, you know, Jim Rockford driving around all the time in a Firebird. You had Knight Rider in a Firebird.
Pontiac was
the cool brand.
With T-tops, yeah. Or either T-tops or the Firebird, Firebird decal on the roof. Your choice.
On the hood, yeah.
Yeah, or on the hood, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they had, at one time, they made great cars. And
yeah, Junior Johnson and a GTO. Yeah, come on. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a cargasm.
Yeah, they made their own engines at one point. I mean, really.
Smokey and the Bandit, anyone?
What's that?
Smokey and the Bandit, anyone? Eastbound and Down? Or was that a transit?
The funny thing was, so much of their greatest success was from James DeLorean,
before he decided to inspire the making of, Back to the Future, as well as giving some respectability and panache to cocaine trafficking, right? Hey, Spike, I got to roll on, brother. But it's awful good talking to you.
Yeah, good talking to you. And had Larry Flint, by the way, do a big story on that piece to expose also what went on.
All right, you take care.
All right,
later. From Tobyhanna, PA, that's our good buddy Spike. Onward we roll. Or not. Guys, come on. Jump right in. I was going to take, the only reason I rolled on Spike was to hit another call, but no patience. Well, you know what the number is, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. How do other guys get people to wait for them for hours at a time? Yeah, I don't know. Me, I get the impatient crowd. Anyway, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or 304-658-3333 on your nickel if you want to jump in on this prayer meeting edition of the Horn this Wednesday night, this getting cold again Wednesday night, this expecting 7 inches of snow here Wednesday night. But there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothing. Where are my pants? No. But, yeah. Who the hell am I? By the way, the email address, in case you're new to the program, you can always reach us by email at bobkincaid, bobkincaid, @gmail.com. Another reminder, if you haven't friended up with me on Facebook and you've got a Facebook account, please feel free to jump in on that. And follow me on Twitter. Sure would love to have a couple of thousand folks following me on Twitter. Because you're nobody if you're not getting followed on Twitter. But like I said, the idea of having followers is, I don't know, there's something life of Brian-y about me that rather objects to that whole principle. Let's keep rolling. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hello, is this Bob?
This is Bob.
Hi, this is Tino, Deb.
Well, hey, Deb, how are you?
Oh, I have a cold.
Oh, you sound like you're very unhappy.
I'm very ill right now, but I wanted to call in. I'm a Toyota person. I just bought a brand new 2010 Toyota Camry. And before that, I had a Chevy Impala, and I didn't like it at all. I felt like an old lady. And my dad said, well, you are an old lady. But anyway, I bought it at the, like, September 30th. And about a month later, I'm driving it down the road, and the speed limit was 35, and I saw that I was going 40. So I just took my foot off the accelerator, and it kept on, it went down to 35 miles an hour, and it stayed there for about three-quarters of a mile. I'm driving it, and I thought it was a feature of the Toyota that I didn't know about. I came home and I told my husband about it. I said, you know, I did not know they had that feature. That I'd like to know how to disengage it, though. I thought it was a feature that, you know, you're driving and you can just hold it there. You know, I don't know what I was thinking. But so then a couple weeks later, it did the same thing to me. It's just, so yesterday I drove it. I was driving it, and it went from 35 down to 25, and it held, and it did go below 25.
Have you been to the dealership yet?
No, I haven't yet.
I'm thinking you might wanna.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I don't know if they would ever fix the problem. They probably would think it was my accelerator. accelerator pedal. They're not, but I'll do that, yeah. I did email Toyota. I had a 92 Toyota Camry. And a couple of times before Matt got in, got tangled up in the accelerator. And I almost got in an accident one time with it for that reason. And it scared me. Oh, my goodness, it scared me. So I emailed Toyota about month and a half ago about this.
Mm-hmm.
They never responded.
No, that was back when they were still in denial. Deb, don't hesitate, okay? I know you don't feel good, but get that thing into the dealership, please.
Okay.
I mean, don't fool with it. If it's there have been something like 34 reported accidents and 29 deaths.
Well, it's not. Are they admitting to it that because it is not floor mat or anything?
No. Well, they're not only admitting to that. They made a big ballyhoo a couple of weeks ago about the fact that, well, you know, we're gonna fix it. We've got an accelerator rod. Blah blah blah. We're examining the floor mats. Yada yada yada. But in congressional testimony, I think just yesterday, or maybe the day before, The president of Toyota North America said, listen, all of these fixes may not still eliminate the problem. So,
You know what brought my attention? I was watching TV. I think it was yesterday. And a lady was on there. She was talking to Congress. And she was talking about what happened with her Lexus. And the she pulled over on the side, her car went stop, and she called her husband, and she just wanted to hear his voice for one last time. She knew her husband could save her, and she called her husband, and he told her what to do, and she did pull over, get it on the side. She called a tow truck, and the tow truck man started that car up, and it took off. It wasn't even out of gear. And they have his testimony, too. She has his testimony in writing. So, yeah. And that's what brought my attention. I forgot all about that. And then I watched it on the news yesterday, and then I drove the car. And, yeah, now, you know, I don't know why. I just thought that was a feature of
It may be a feature, but it's not an advertised one, Deb. So, no. Hie thee hence to thy dealer. Stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once.
Yeah, so, I'll call them up and get an appointment then tomorrow.
Please, and let us know. Let us know how it works out, and I hope you get to feeling better. Awfully good of you to call in.
Thank you, Bob, and I enjoy your show, and I enjoyed last night what I saw.
Well, we're still working out a few of the hinks and kinks and bugs, but we're gonna get it licked. I think it's gonna be a really exciting step forward for us.
Yeah, that man, both those men were very interesting. So, it's gonna be exciting when you get it all of the bugs. But I really enjoyed it. And thank you very much. You have a wonderful show, and thank you for allowing me to call.
Okay. Oh gosh, thank you for making the call. Take care, Deb.
Okay, thank you, Bob.
Bye now. Yeah, and when you realize the life that Ray McGovern has led, I mean, this is a guy who went whistling into the Oval Office with the presidential daily briefing for a number of presidents. Hey, Ray, how you doing? Ah, good. You? Okay. Wow. And the things that he has been party to and privy to and aware of, and the effort that he's making now just to get out and get a basic level of working understanding among American people is nothing short of stunning. And I'll go so far as to say it's doggone patriotic. Onward we roll. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, how are you?
Good, you?
All right. So you're about to drift into the world of web radio, something or another?
Web TV.
Yeah, oh, wow. Is that the U.S. stream or something?
Yeah, last night we tried Ustream, and, we're just experimenting and trying things as we go. It went fairly well, but for a lot of people, the frame rate went way down, and things locked up and froze up, and it may have been bandwidth. We're not sure. It's going to take some more experimentation, but... You know, when I think about things like that progressive media conference that Mark Carlin and I were discussing, this stuff can be done. You know, what it takes a $10 million broadcast truck with a satellite dish on the top to do, God, we can do it for almost nothing. And, of course...
Yeah, no, it's amazing that. That's the... I mean, you know, it's really exciting. It's just hopefully you can... get that going, but what are you trying to say? You're going to have to shave or something?
And put on clothes? You know, I'm a profoundly informal kind of guy, Sandra. I'm not worrying about putting on a necktie. I'm worrying about putting on a shirt.
Well, you know that other, I guess he's a lefty talker that, Ferris? Yes, Ferris?
Yeah, yeah.
He has his on, I guess, U.S. stream. Have you checked out his show at all?
Well, I never can because we're on at the same time.
That's right. No way. Can't do that then. But, I know he has his, because I guess he got fired and he set up his stuff like Mike Malloy, so...
Well, it's certainly doable. It's just that our studio here in the main, one of the big, well, there are a couple of big hang-ups, glitches, whatever. One of them is that the studio here is tiny, and over the course of nearly 5 years, I've just about run myself out of my own studio.
Oh, okay.
So
but,
there's going to be some heavy lifting involved, and preferably in the springtime.
Yeah, but it wouldn't. But overall, though, it wouldn't be like a huge financial outlay.
No, we've got what we need to do it with now.
No, that would be, that'd be an exciting step.
It would be a lot of fun, except for the fact that I am absolutely I'm a radio guy, and I am absolutely terrified of the camera.
Terrified. You know, I mean, it's sort of. I know it's not like you're anonymous, but you know that's the thing about radio. I mean,
well, I love it. Yeah, I love it because of it, the fact that it lets you use your, it lets a listener, and, you know, I'm not just doing this, I'm also a listener. I'm there listening to Malloy every night and so forth, and going down the road or whatever, and it lets your mind do some of the work, and I see that as being a lot more fun. But I've gotten a lot of responses saying, gosh, we hope you do it.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, because I was thinking, I mean, there's no way that, you know, if I had to show my face to, say, call you, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It just wouldn't happen. It takes a little bit of whatever to make reasonable phone calls, but, you know, the anonymity factor definitely plays in for me. You know, I certainly wouldn't want to put my face in there talking this BS I'd be saying. You know, it's something amusing about calling out in space, you know?
Well, yeah, and frankly, I mean, there's photos of me and stuff out there on the inner tubes and whatnot, but as someone, you know, I used to do, you know, college and community theater and stuff like that, and all of a sudden I'm into this place that I haven't been in years where I'm going, wait a minute, I'm 47 years old. Do I have turkey neck yet? You know. and now I got to shave. Yeah, I got to shave every day. And
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the pain of fame, Bob. The pain of fame.
Yeah, yeah. Me and Tiger Woods.
Hey, listen, you know, since the callers are talking about that Toyota thing, did you hear about that poor man who apparently was, like, locked up for, you know, some sort of vehicular death, but it's now turning out that perhaps his car was subjected to what is going on now, but it was in 2006, and this man's been in jail?
Oh, my God.
Would he claim that? No, he said over and over again.
Oh, is this the guy who got hung out to dry by the black box or whatever?
Well, he put his foot, and he claimed in his trial that the accelerator stuck, and, you know, no one bought it because there was a death involved. And this poor man sounds like he was a victim of this. I hadn't.
God, I hope there's somebody out there who can file a habeas on his behalf.
Yeah, I just was, you know, I only heard bits. I was just sort of appalled. I'm like, ooh, that's awful. So, you know, his whole life was destroyed. I don't know how many people died, but, you know, he was sentenced to 8 years.
Golly Moses.
So I just thought.
And so he's probably still in the stir.
Yeah, and so I'm just wondering, you know, it's just sort of amazing that's come about, too. I don't know. I was sort of appalled that.
Well, see, I've always been really, really leery of the so-called black boxes that go into modern automobiles, Sandra, because they're data counters, and what happens is after a wreck, especially with serious injuries or fatality, the authorities go and retrieve the box, and it does not matter whether you say I was doing 35 miles an hour in a 45 mile an hour zone. If that thing says you were doing 46, your butt gets hung.
Well, no, it is sort of, and it's just creepy. It's like those lights that flash when you run a stoplight. I mean, it's not like you can take that to court, you know, and face your accuser, right?
No. How do you do that?
Right. I mean, so you're sort of at the mercy of technology, sort of like the DNA business, which they're coming to find out that isn't as straight and narrow as they make it out to be. So. Anyway, so this guy is being done over because of this Toyota business. And also, did you hear that they were bragging months ago about how, their lobbying efforts are keeping the regulators off of them?
Oh, yeah, they're real proud of it.
And it's just kind of
bought and, what appeared to have been bought and paid for regulators.
Right, captured regulators again. I'm just shaking my head thinking, wow. And also, the economy of scale for Toyota is sort of out, is doing them in. You know, they're huge now, and what goes with that is, you know, shoddy products.
And, you know, I hate to even say it, but isn't it true that the Japanese-built stuff is not subject to all of this?
What you mean, the sort of regulations?
Well, the recall regulation, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not too sure, except that I know that, you know how, I mean, because I have a Toyota, and, you know, I've been holding on this car forever because it never breaks down. But in Japan, because of the environmental rules, they can only keep an engine for, 70,000 miles or something different. So, because I remember looking for engines online, that you could buy an engine that only had 60, 70,000, you know what I mean? So I got the impression that their rules were far more stringent than we.
And you know, I knew one of those people, or know one of those people, who had a one of those million-mile Corollas or whatever. all he did was change the oil.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've had a few repairs recently, but, you know, it is a 92, Camry, and that was a particularly good batch. So, you know, they do have a good reputation, but this isn't good. This sounds like I don't know. I mean, everyone's coming out of the woodwork with their stuck accelerators, right?
And you get the real sense, Sandra, that Toyota has been, I don't know, I guess this is an appropriate comparison for a Wednesday night prayer meeting, that Toyota has treated its stuck accelerator problem like the Pope treated the child abuse scandal when he was the cardinal for the doctrine of the faith. You know, you send out an order and say, don't let anybody talk about this. And that's really evil on both counts, as far as I'm concerned.
Excuse me. Yeah, no, they haven't handled it very well.
It's harmed. It's clearly harmed the brand.
Oh no, the brand is
But the other thing it's done is it has. I mean, those who insist on remaining loyal to Toyota have done so with teeth. Bart Kopp is pissed. So, you want to talk about crazy. Remember the MB twins in the House of Representatives, those crazy Republican women, Marsha Blackburn, and then there's Michelle Bachmann.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, Marsha Blackburn is the blonde. And apparently she has got, I'm being told because, I think she's actually David in Tennessee's congresswoman. She has actually gotten out and come into that whole dilemma, defending Toyota, even though, the fact of the matter is there's no Toyota, plants in her district. On the other hand, there's several thousand, or I mean, several thousand, employees because of, and subcontractors. But on the other hand, there is an out and out Nissan manufacturing plant sitting down in Smyrna, Tennessee, and you got to be thinking that the Nissan people are going, you know, thanks for nothing. But you know, when it comes to one of the MBs, you know, they're insane, just nuts.
Well, this woman is, she's from that white nationalist party too, right? That's what I'm calling the Tea Party now.
She is, but she and Michelle Bachmann both refused to show up there at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel for the Palin Fest where she wrote on her hand. I think it was partly a combination of being jealous of the attention Palin was getting, jealous of the $100,000 that Caribou Barbie was getting, and generally.
Cat fight.
Oh, yeah. Better you say it than I.
Yeah, well, no, but the thing is that, you know, everyone seems to be, you know, walking on eggshells because they're all captured. I mean, this is a horrible story, but it's also enlightening on just how captured this government is by these various corporations.
Well, and, you know,
Spike
raised a really great point, and it's something that we kind of hammer on here. And that is, when you're getting millions of dollars a year in network advertising from somebody, from a corporation that finds itself having a problem, how much hard-boiled, hard-hitting investigative journalism can you really do on it?
Well, no, that's why I was laughing when you were talking about the gold, always going up, up, up. And in the meanwhile, you got George Soros talking about gold is the biggest bubble ever. Then you look at he has shortened his position on the shit. None of these people, they all lying. You know what I mean? You know, it's just, I was just laughing about the gold because it's like, yeah, Soros, he opens his mouth, people start scrambling, but you dig deep and you see, well, no, this fool has investments in gold up the butt. So what is he on about?
Well, you know, the thing is, if you look out there, and, you know, you and I talked about that gold mining operation, what, down in, was it Panama? El Salvador, maybe.
With the cyanide extraction hell, yeah.
Right, and they got it going on there. They got it. They got gold. One of the biggest gold operations in the world, supposedly, in what, Nevada?
Mm.
Aren't they glutting the market?
Well, yeah, and you know, I mean, the prices still aren't falling all that much, but it's just, you know, none of these things. It's not like a sure thing, and I think that. You make a good point with Fox. You know, you can't trust that. Beyond their personalities who are like, I don't know what they are, Republicans or Tea Party people.
And oddly enough, within Wingnut World, Sandra, apparently a lot of people aren't sure what they are because, among other things, that one little freak, Mark Levin, the guy with the guy with the voice made for print, who sounds like he gargles razor blades, he's come out and delivered a whole broadside jeremiad against Glenn Beck, saying, you know, Beck is hurting the party. Beck is tearing the party apart. You be something, you're nothing. Oh, it was a nasty little thing he leveled against him.
Well, no, they obviously have their internal problems, but I'm still reeling from that idiot demanding that progressives be, what, murdered? Are we now just straight up fascists? Calling out a group of people to be eliminated. Hello.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, on an institutional level, I don't know if you caught the announcement yesterday or day before. That evil freak with the new hair dye job, Beck, he did succeed in killing Acorn. Because you know they had that announcement within the last 48 hours saying Acorn is no longer a national organization. Because of the funding dry up. And Acorn didn't do anything wrong.
Okay, so that was just a direct attack, made up crap. No, I followed that. I mean, wasn't it Brad who's been digging into this?
Oh, yeah, and Brad Friedman has done an excellent job.
And it just sort of showed that this was wholly made up?
It was a hit. It was a number. It was a criminal conspiracy, frankly.
And just think about, you know, if you dig deeper, it's just really frightening because what constituency does Acorn serve?
Poor folks.
Right. You know,
people who were trying to save their houses out of predatory mortgages.
And maybe cast a vote.
Yeah. And so so this country benefits how? By having Acorn not helping people save their homes?
Well, it's just, you know, the road to serfdom, you know, continues. You gotta take out any threat, you know, to the oligarchs. I mean, I don't even know what to think. And these people who are doing their bidding, it is something like, what's that writer? Is that Sinclair Lewis?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't, the direct attack on, you know, working people, progressives.
Look at Van Jones.
No. I blame Obama for that, too. It's like, why don't you back up your people? But no, he's giving away money for nuclear. I still can't get past that. The nuclear. I heard that there's a 50% default on those loan guarantees, Bob. Did you know that?
I'm surprised it's that low.
Well.
Because I don't know how you ever pay for the darn things before they're, because we can hardly keep the damn things online.
Yeah, but they surely have a huge lobbying crew, and they infested the Obama administration. I can't believe how many of them people have ties to the nuclear industry. Axelrod.
I mean, but is it, don't you imagine that Stephen Chu? I mean, this guy's got a Nobel Prize. and he's a real live, honest-to-God scientist. Did he not get the phone call? You know, or did Stephen Chu just say, you do what you want to. You're the president.
Is this the energy secretary?
Is he energy secretary? I thought he was.
I don't know. The name is familiar. What's his position?
I thought he was science advisor or something. He may be.
Oh,
there.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I thought he might be the. No, he is the energy secretary.
Yeah, that's okay. As I thought, but I don't. You know, I just don't really understand it. And what's really disturbing is that aren't they going to make the poor people in Georgia prepay? They got to prepay. Because their rates are going up.
Oh yeah, they want it on the front.
Right, but I just am sort of tongue tied by, you know, what a complete rip off it is.
It's astonishing, and it's so short sighted, and so. Well, it's not short sighted. It's, and I hate to say this about Obama. It's dumb.
Yeah, it don't really make a whole bunch of sense.
Well, I forget. I think maybe it was a Public Citizen or somebody who said, this is a preemptive bailout.
Oh, no, everything's a bailout. I was, sort of seething at that bitch who was from WellPoint talking about justifying these premiums in front of Congress. Is it today?
Yeah, and it turns out it was done solely to maximize profit.
You know, it's so gross because what's going on is that people are saying, oh, I can't afford this, so they're dropping. You know, if they're healthy, they're like, I got to do without. So they say they got to raise their rates because they're losing customers. Well, why the hell are you losing customers, you rapacious?
Because they intentionally mean to price people out of the market.
No, it's an incredible thing, and
well, I've said 100 times now, I guess, Sandra, that I wish somebody would have pulled me aside and had me take that accounting 101 class, because these numbers are bizarre to me. According to a WellPoint email of October 7th, 2009, quote, the average increase is 23%, and it's intended to return California to a target profit of 7% versus the 5% this year. So a 5% profit margin is not enough in the healthcare industry, or the insurance industry. How is that not?
Yeah, I don't really understand. I mean, and just sort of the way the industry is laid out, it's just incredible because, yeah, of course you're going to lose customers when you keep raising rates. It's like a spiral, you know?
And when if they get their 7%, how long before they need 9? I got 9, can I hear 12? I got 12. 12. Who'll give me 15? 15.
And in the meantime, if you're in the insurance business, the customers you want to keep, the young ones who pay, but never use, but after a while they're like, dude, I'm out. And that's what's going on now. Okay?
Well, those are the ones. There are those who are doing it, but then there are the ones that are being deliberately dumped. You know, Anthem pulled this stuff. Kaiser Permanente has done this stuff, where they do a predetermined dump via a rate raise to get people off of the rolls who actually go to the doctor.
Oh yeah, no, I mean it's from both ends, but their solution is to gouge the few people who are left in the hopes of squeezing that 7, 9, 12% you were talking about.
Right, and that's why when I see the Obama administration come out, Sandra, and say, well, you know, we're going to propose legislation that is going to give the federal government veto power over these profit takings, I'm thinking, you know what? Day late, dollar short, horse gone, barn burnt.
And not only that, but it's BS, because as soon as some other administration comes in, those agencies need to be funded. What did the Bush administration do to the EPA for 8 years, Bob?
Or an even better example, the Mine Safety and Health Administration. I was reading.
Right. They defund it or they don't pay, you know. Yeah.
I think the number I saw in Jeff Bigger's book about the Mine Safety and Health Administration cuts in the Bush administration, something like on the order of an 18% budget cut.
Right.
That's crippling.
or it'd be like a labor relations board where they never appoint anyone. You see what I mean? So that's a bunch of, that's a load of BS what Obama's talking about. The only solution to what they're doing is, you know, if you don't have single payer, you got to have some other buy-in for people. That's not private corporations, you know?
Right, and that's, and you know, oddly enough, I think that's one of the factors about a public option. Of course, you and me, you know, we're single payer. That's the only real remedy, and we both know it. But at least where a public option is concerned, the one thing about the public option is that it actually compels for-profit insurance to compete in a free market manner.
Well,
because you can't negotiate with a healthcare company, but if there's a public option over there that you can get into, you can tell them to take a hike when they do the profit raising.
Well, no, but it's incredible because, you know, like I was listening, the France and Germany and these other countries that aren't single payer, but they still provide service because they can negotiate every procedure. That's what they do. So everyone knows what the prices are. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And they're non-profit by law.
And when you go to the hospital and come back, you don't get 19 bills.
No, and it's by law that the primary care insurers or whatever can't make a profit. You know, we don't even have a look-see on that. They can't even control the antitrust aspect of this madness here. Anyway, I just sort of, you know, tomorrow what? They're going to strut around and do what? I'm not holding out. What time is that coming on?
yeah, right. Get the cheap tequila.
Oh my God. Yeah. Anyway, I'll let you go. You might want to squeeze another one in, but yeah.
Well, Sandra, thank you very much. And I know.
Okay. Listen. Keep working on that. You know, I want to see your face.
You know what? Don't make me work on the technology where it makes it possible to see yours.
Oh, let's see now.
I can do that.
I got my Reagan mask.
Yeah.
I got that ready.
Yeah, everybody calling the program with a V for Vendetta face on. Gotta love it.
Exactly. Okay, Bob. Take care.
Later, Sandra. Bye now. And let's see. Onward. Or not. Hey, welcome to the program.
Welcome from California, Bob. It's Richard.
Well, hey, Richard. How are you?
I'm okay. I keep missing you because of various things that happened around the time when I want to call you. So I do listen to virtually every program on MP3.
Well, I'm glad you can do that, and glad you were able to reach the show live.
Well, yeah. MP3 is interesting. First of all, let me comment on something that Sandra just brought up, which is Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Anthem, and whoever owns them. In my opinion, these guys are the biggest ripoff in the whole industry.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, at one time they were nonprofit. Their management literally ripped off the whole company. They created a holding company that they owned and moved all the profit, all the property into the holding company, leaving an empty shell. So
And you know what that's called? That's called good business.
Well, Blue Cross, Blue Shield has, I mean, their history is terrible around here. A whole bunch of hospitals at one point, not too long ago, refused to take their patients because they were getting stiffed by these people. And it was only when it hit the press and blew up that way, you know, that they got off their butt.
Yeah. I mean, the 45,000 people a year, Richard, who die every year, not from disease, but from simple need of access to coverage. Every one of these decisions, whether it's Anthem or WellPoint or any of these other creepy outfits, they've got, and see, this is one of those moments that, Mark Carlin was talking about at the beginning of the program where we're not framing, we're not messaging. These companies have blood, wet blood, fresh blood on their hands.
Yeah. Well, nicely put, you know, I look for alternatives, and, you know, I've talked about that before, you know, that I'm involved in alternatives, which brings me to something else.
I was going to say, and I didn't mention this in talking with Sandra, and I want to make sure that it gets out there, because I'm sure a lot of other people have seen it. You've probably seen it too, Richard. Talking about from the thanks for not helping some more department, my senator, Jay Rockefeller. What is that man thinking, Richard? You know, they went to him and said, you know, Senator Rockefeller, you were a big proponent of the public option. Would you be interested in passing it via reconciliation? And, you know, it's kind of in line with that. You remember that old line from Bambi where, what is it, Thumper's mother says, Thumper, what did I tell you? And little Thumper says, if you can't say anything nice, don't say nothing at all. Well, apparently, Jay Rockefeller never saw Bambi. Because when he's asked this question, instead of saying, well, you know, I'm taking it under advisement, I'm still studying it, because, you know, it might be made to work. Instead, Jay says, well, you know, I just don't think I can support that. Well, then be quiet, Jay. And let the rest of us get it done.
Yeah, well put. Well, I want to ask you, how do I sound right now?
You are, I've got, actually, I've got the slide on your channel almost maxed out. You're very, very low.
Okay, let me improve that.
Well, don't fiddle with it. I learned that lesson the hard way last night. Do not adjust on the fly.
You know, I'm an old audio guy with some radio experience, and, you know, like you, I suspect, we don't like to sound bad.
Oh, no, but I'm getting you through there. I've got you jacked up. You're getting out okay. But
yeah, I've been quite interested in the various kinds of audio quality that come through telephones and the subsequent degradation of sound that we get when different digital systems sort of get compounded and really make things bad. So my test case on this is Reverbo, which I think I mentioned to you before. I listen in the MP3, and Reverbo comes through so bad, I often can't understand what he's saying. He sounds like he's gargling. And I'm interested in working on that with him, because I want to hear what he says.
But see, it's not anything that anyone is doing, Richard.
No, I know.
And that's the problem here. It's far more to do with, you know, it's the little C Catholic quality of phone systems being taken out because of the free market and competition and yada, yada, yada.
Also.
So that you don't have any universal standards left in transmission. You add into that the fact that.
To have when AT&T had the monopoly. And this is, but I, you know, I'm thinking about individual phones themselves, especially cordless phones. Some of them have the microphone buried inside it, so the sound is hollow.
Well, but not just that. Like with cell phones, if you've got a 2 or 3 year old cell phone, but you're dealing with Verizon or AT&T or Sprint, all of these things have gone to voice processing technologies that are not, you know, it's all digital. It's no longer analog. So that what's going on is when your signal reaches the cell tower, it's going through a voice emulator. In other words, what you're hearing on the other end, if, for instance, I use a cell phone and I call my wife, she hears me, but it's not actually me. It's a computer emulating what it thinks I sound like.
Oh, I got to look that up. I've worked a little bit in that industry, too, and, you know, that's a side of it that I never got into. But I just had my son give cell phone service from an outfit that's called Metro PCS. I don't know if you're probably not familiar with them, but it's a prepaid all-you-can-eat cell company.
Oh, I have heard of them. I have heard of them. Yeah.
No, they only operate in certain metropolitan areas. Of course, that keeps on getting bigger. But after he got the phone, various problems emerged and. You know, so I'm learning a bit more. I don't have a cell phone yet. Anyway, moving on.
Well, we can't, Richard, because unfortunately I'm out of time.
Yep,
So got to roll, but we will expand the conversation a later date, okay?
Okay, and I'd like to be in touch with Roberto. I'd be able to help on that.
Okay, well, if he writes me about that, I will certainly try to put you in touch.
Okay, great.
And shoot me a note and let me know which email to convey, please.
Will do.
All right. See you, Richard.
Thanks.
Bye now. And 2.5 minutes before the hour, and it's, wow, where did prayer meeting go? But it's gone. And it's been a fun one. Thanks a million to Mark Carlin for a very scintillating conversation. Again, you know, thanks for the, the little heads up to folks about, the little liberal media miracle that you guys have been responsible for keeping on the air, for something approaching 5 years now. Thank you to you for being you and being there month in and month out. Thank you for getting us up around our monthly fundraising goal. It is sincerely appreciated. We've got some stuff that's going to bite into that coming in the very near future. But we've also got ways out there that we're hoping will build audience and add to the greater weight of our ability to spread the message around. So there's a lot to be excited about. Hope you'll join us tomorrow night, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. There should be a boatload of disgusting snow on the ground by then, although not nearly as nasty as what Spike tells me is on its way to him. He says that the big nasty soon come for him. He says that they're getting you're supposed to get 24 inches there where he is with 70-mile-an-hour winds for Thursday. Feh. Yuck. Yeah. Glad it ain't me, but still, it's going to be nasty around here, and they'll probably close school again. And before we go, from the Credit Where Credit Is Due department, one quick thing. There's a lot of stuff out there to take issue with the National Collegiate Athletic Association about. The fact that athletes are used like slave labor, for starts, but they got one right, and when somebody out there gets one right, we are equal opportunity. And praise and heaps of atta boy, atta organization, atta whatever, goes out to the NCAA this evening. Now, they screwed up on the front end because on the heels of its monumental success with its really stupid fraudulent ad by Tim Tebow and his mama with the hair colored with a Sharpie black hair, Pam. On the heels of that quote-unquote success, they decided they were going to go after the NCAA and do some advertising there. They're targeting college sports. It was reported earlier in this week by the LGBT blogging community that NCAA.com was running a Focus on the Family banner ad, but the site has now pulled the Celebrate Family, Celebrate Life ad because people used their voices to make the NCAA aware of what a filthy, 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 disgusting, bigoted, prejudiced organization Focus on the Family is. The quote, the poll quote coming, and by the way, thanks to Maura for bringing this to my attention. The NCAA made the decision after some of its members, including faculty and athletic directors, expressed concern that the evangelical group's stance against gay and lesbian relationships conflicted with the NCAA's policy of inclusion regardless of sexual orientation. And this is the good part. This is where they got it right. NCAA spokesman Bob Williams said the decision to pull the ad was based not on the message, but on the messenger. In other words, we don't want anything to do with a bunch of bigots. So, no. Big walking up the 18th fairway clap to the folks at the National Collegiate Athletic Association for getting one right. And having the nerve to slap down the pigs and Focus on the Family. Take that, Tim Tebow! Or don't take it. You'd probably like it. So anyway, thanks to all of you for making all of this possible. If you want to continue to help the horn, you can. and we are more than willing to accept it. There's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com and a snail mail address at headonradionetwork.com under the Contribute tab. Thanks always go out to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Also to our moderators in the chat room, Lottie and Sue, otherwise known as ELO. To our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. To our blogger, Texas Betsy. To Matt Osborne, our Southeast correspondent. And to the head writer, David from Tennessee. Always thanks go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. It is hard work they do. It is difficult work they do. And it is often frightening work that they do. But they do it because they are the hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Wasn't that fun last night? I certainly thought so. I was really glad, and it was good to have you all along for the Seneca 2 Forum lecture series featuring Bob Perry from ConsortiumNews.com and Ray McGovern. They are both very, very impressive, well-spoken, well-informed gentlemen. And Agnes, I, and Horn intern junior grade Ferg enjoyed ourselves immensely. Of course, we enjoyed ourselves most in bringing it to all of you. And although there were some fits and starts along the way, I was overall pleased with the way the video thing worked out. It will get better. I have the distinct sense that the days of my being able to sit here in complete and utter nudity doing radio are going to become... Well, they are fast receding into the dim mists of the past. Oh, goodbye, naked radio. Hello, internet TV. But not yet. It's a little bit early yet to queue up Video Killed the Radio Star. But I got a feeling we'll be playing that sooner rather than later. But it was an enjoyable experience, and I hope the information conveyed was also useful to you. Although I wasn't able to talk with him on air, I did have an excellent conversation with Bob Perry off air. And what may have actually been more important Foreign intern junior grade Ferg had a tremendous conversation with Ray McGovern in his own right. And, you know, how do you say this? Modern 14-year-olds are, to say the least, jaded. They are inundated. They have been inundated from the day they were born with information and media, and they multitask, and they do a little of this and a little of that. And but to see Ferg just absolutely home in on what Ray McGovern had to say and the things that he told Ferg was inspiring, very much so. So it was overall a very good experience. And a little bit of a programming note. Coming up toward the end of next week, at the very least, I will be gone for a bit. We have coming up in the second week of March what is usually referred to as Lobby Week in Washington. It's technically called The Week in Washington, when a whole bunch of us folks who are affected by mountaintop removal go to Washington and walk the corridors of power, trying to convey to members of Congress exactly what a horror it is when we have to deal with the effects upon our persons and upon our property, upon our and upon our future, and yes, even upon our past, of mountaintop removal. So I will be gone the better part of, if not the entirety of, the second week of March. We don't know quite yet whether that's all going to be reruns or, and I haven't even taken time to talk to John Fox and see if he might want to be interested in covering one or any of those nights. So I wanted you to know in advance. Hey, where's Bob? Well, you know, Bob's doing the thing that Bob has to do to try to save Bob's home. So, yeah, that's the second week in March. And it probably